Right. The hour of 8:30 having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order when we have a quorum. Members, we have two bills before us today. The first one is Anderson P., Chairman Anderson P., 4395. We will start with that one. We will go till about 0945, and then we will, hopefully we're long done with 4395. And then we will, of course, go to session, and we'll come back about a half hour after session, I believe in this room. In room 200 here. So, because you can see on the second bill, the Torkelson bill, there's quite a few testifiers, and we do want to hear from everyone. So that being said, we do not have a quorum, but we will start to hear the bill. And this, the motion would be to move this bill to Legacy Committee. Is that correct, Chair Anderson P.? Okay. Getting corn in yesterday?
It was a good weekend.
Good weekend, got some in?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so with that, I will move House File 4395, and I believe there's an amendment coming around. I will move that when we have a quorum, so we will hear testimony as if we had the bill before us as amended, but we will take care of those logistics in just a bit. So that being said, welcome to the committee, Chairman Anderson P. Do you have the amendment?
No, I don't.
Let's get the amendment. It's the A2 amendment. I believe you talked about this in... Property Tax Division, but no official action was taken. So that's what we're talking about. So with that, to your bill, sir.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and members as well. Good morning. Thanks for coming in this early Tuesday morning. And, this bill, House File 4395, is an attempt to, in some measure, compensate those that own the land, mainly farmers, for the land that they have to give up that will be put into riparian buffer strips along public waters and along public drainage ditches. Over the past couple of years, we have allocated sums of money to Bowser SWCDs, and for good cause, to help them with implementation and things like that. But the one group we have left out in all of these talks are the actual landowners themselves. And I think it's an issue of fairness that we somehow compensate the farmers or landowners that give up land for the good of the state for buffer strips to improve water quality here in Minnesota. And, Mr. Chair, the amendment, the original bill, I had kind of fences around the eligibility of those who could qualify for this payment, this annual payment of $50 an acre. We had buffers installed between 2015 and 2019. And it was felt that there were other buffers in place before that that would also qualify for the state's buffer requirement for water quality. So the amendment kind of opened it up to other acres that had been in buffers previously. And with that, the problem started in terms of coming up with an accurate acreage number as to how many acres of buffers actually are in place already that would qualify for this buffer payment. The original bill, the acreage was pared down to about 90,000 acres, and the cost was dropped to about $4 million. But now with the amendment onto the bill, the latest revenue note came back in at about 300,000 acres and a cost of between $12 and $15 million a year. And I understand the difficulty in trying to come up with an acreage number, and therein lies the problem in terms of how much do we allocate for a program like this. And I question some of these numbers. We're looking up a 2015 study by the DNR, and they had cultivated riparian acres and then those that were not cultivated. And since this bill called for land that had been categorized as A2 farmland, I would tend to think that the acreage number would be smaller than this estimate, but that is what it is right now, Mr. Chair, and the cost is at that $12 million the first year in 2019 for this program. And I believe there are a couple of testifiers who want to talk about on the bill, Mr. Chair. We can hear those now.
Yes, we certainly will. Then we'll go to member questions. We're just one short of a quorum, so we will be breaking into whoever's testifying to get us actually on the record. So with that being said, let's go to Amber Glazer, Minnesota Farm Bureau. And by the way, Chair Anderson P., I really like your bill and how you've got this structured. I think it's brilliant. It's for about clean water. But that being said, Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Amber Hansen-Glazer. I'm the Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Minnesota Farm Bureau supports HF 4395 as written. We appreciate Chair Anderson's leadership in helping to address the property tax treatment of ag land that has been removed from production to comply with the 2015 buffer law. This bill takes another step towards making the buffer law workable for farmers. Buffered acres that have been taken out of production are still assessed at ag land rates, which assume the property is still generating income from crop production. This $50 an acre credit would help to provide some sort of tax relief for those farmers not enrolled in other programs such as CRP without shifting that tax burden onto their neighbors. Thank you, Chair Davids and members of this committee, for taking the time to hear this bill. And on behalf of the more than 30,000 Minnesota Farm Bureau families, I ask for your support.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions to the testifier? Okay, I have Mr. Tom Peterson, Minnesota Farmers Union, next. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Peterson, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we, too, are here to speak in favor of House File 4395 and thank Representative Anderson for putting this legislation forward. As you know, farmers are required last fall to install a 50-foot buffer on public waters, and this coming fall, on November 1st, we'll need to put a 16.5 buffer on public drainage systems. And as my understanding, too, last year, I think this is kind of interesting, we had a waiver system in place, too, just as a FYI, and somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000 landowners did apply for a waiver and couldn't get that buffer in. One of the pieces, when I asked why did all the people apply for that, was compensation. And looking at, they wanted to get into a program like CRP or CREP or look at some other kind of piece. Keep in mind, too, that the CRP, or Conservation Reserve Program, for those that aren't familiar with it, is currently full or is capped right now in Minnesota. So people are put at a waiting list or they're not able to get into that. And so that's a really big issue because the administration, legislators, we told farmers this going forward, one of the options if you wanted to get paid was to use CRP. And so that's something that we're continuing to work out. There is CREP in the state that we're putting forward, but keep in mind CREP, too, is a permanent program and may not work for some farmers. In most cases, there is little income coming off of this land. A lot of our farmers can tell you how much they lose in a row of corn, and they may put up some hay on this property as well, or interesting on that. MFU also understands this funding for this legislation does cause some people angst and coming from the Clean Water Fund, but our policy does support this, and our members feel this is a good use of the dollars. We are open to continuing to discuss the funding as this program goes forward. Thank you for your consideration.
Mr. Peterson, you said that farmers could make hay on that, on those buffer strips, but do they have to wait till August 1st, or can they make it any time?
Mr. Chairman, members, if it's not in a CRP program, you can make hay on it, so I should clarify that. And so that... and it depends on the length and or width of it as well, can be an issue sometimes too. But most farmers are able to make hay on the buffers if they're able to.
Okay. Now, members, we do have a quorum. I'll officially call me in the House Tax Committee to order.
Yes.
Representative Schultz moves the minutes of Tuesday, April 24th. Any discussion, additions, or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Item next, I will move House File 4395, and the motion will be to refer it to the Legacy Committee. I will now move the H-439-582 amendment that the author has already explained. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Say no. Motion barely prevails. Okay. And members, I've learned over the years, and we'll go to questions for Mr. Peterson here, but I've learned over the years that if you have the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union agreeing on something, maybe you just get out of the way and do it. Just a thought. Just a thought. Questions for Mr. Peterson? Okay, thank you, Mr. Peterson. Let's go to Mr. Dan Larson, Minnesota Rural Counties. Now, just to get a bit of a lay of the land here, how many other folks like to testify on behalf of the bill with concerns on the bill? Would the department like to testify?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we will go to the department after Mr. Larson. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members, Dan Larson representing Minnesota rural counties today, 29 counties in greater, representing the interests of greater Minnesota counties. Thank you for letting me be here today and testify on this bill.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. Early in the session, I really appreciate Representative Anderson bringing this bill forward. Early in the session, we talked. It came up as a priority with Minnesota rural counties when we were setting the stage for the legislative session that landowners really ought to be compensated for the land taken out of production for this state-mandated program. And kind of laid it at his feet. We knew it was kind of a complex issue, but having seen the bill and knowing that he worked on it over the course of the session, we very much appreciate your efforts and do support the bill. We do think it does have a little more work to do, and look forward to working with Representative Anderson and legislators along the way. First and foremost, it is the funding source. Clean water, we prefer it to come from the funding to come from general fund rather than clean water. We know that there's in the clean water bill. We know that there is cost share and buffer money that this could potentially and likely will compete with. So we prefer the payment to come from the general fund. We understand that this is an annual payment. That was a concern and questions that came up. We appreciate that, and that you can, I think, as Mr. Peterson just conveyed, you will continue to be able to hay the land that's taken out of production. So those were key issues with my membership. So with that, Mr. Chair, I thank the committee for allowing me to testify, and I'm open for questions.
Mr. Larson, do buffers help keep water clean?
Mr. Chair, I'm just a lowly lobbyist. I think so. They've said it has. I've heard that there's a lot of different ways to keep water clean, and this is one of them.
Well, Mr. Larson, if you think buffers keep water clean, then why wouldn't you think that we should take this out of the Clean Water Fund?
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at dollars that are already in the dedicated to buffers and buffer cost share in the Clean Water Fund, and I'm concerned about the potential competition.
Chair Drazkowski.
Mr. Chair, you articulated my same rather perplexing question. Mr. Larson, the Clean Water Fund is for clean water. I think we all understood the purpose of buffers to at least be to make our water cleaner. I don't know what else the purpose was, but, I mean, I don't understand the opposition. Apparently, some organizations or people or agencies simply want more of the people's money instead of going through the hard work of prioritizing money that's already there and is required to be spent. Anyway, Mr. Chair, you asked my question. I haven't heard a good answer for it yet. This is clean water money. The stated purpose of the unconstitutional taking that has happened thus far has been to make our waters clean. It would seem to me that if we're going to provide funding for it, it should come from the Clean Water Fund. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Chair Drazkowski, all I can think is great minds think alike. John Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to talk basically on the same line because that was the questions I was going to have earlier. If the Legacy Fund, the Clean Water Fund, was to find some land along a lake or something that they wanted to use to protect clean water and to purchase it, wouldn't that take it off of the tax rolls? And wouldn't that be used for purchasing and doing that land? And so my question is, if the buffers had been directly purchased by Clean Water, would you have an objection? And if so, why would this be any different?
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair and members, let me clarify, please. I understand the line of questioning that is being directed to me at this point. This is not opposition, please. This is a preference. So let me recast if what I'm saying, if that helps. Representative, to your question, yes, I think so.
Representative Petersburg?
I guess enough said at this point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, other questions from members? Chair Marquardt and then Schultz.
So, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And members, I think everyone agrees, the governor and the House and the Senate, Democrats, Republicans, agree with Representative Anderson's bill. So the debate here is where the funding comes from. Let's just put that out here. I think we're getting that general direction. And personally, I don't care. But what I do care about is that there be some flexibility here, because I would hate to see this not become law. And so my one question I do have is, the Clean Water Fund does come out of the legacy, and that's, how long does that go till 2034? And I guess when that would end, where would we look at those dollars to come from once the legacy funding would end? That would be my question. Do we have an idea about
that? Let's go to Mr. Klayman. When, just for the record, that's a very good question. When does the legacy funding end? 2034? 2034.
Okay. There's some goals? It was set for 25 years. We're 10 years into it, so we have 15 years to go. And then it would be, I believe, up to the legislature to decide whether or not to put it back on the ballot or whether it would go directly to the voters to decide again. That I'm not sure.
Okay. 2034?
Mr. Chair?
Well, Representative Marquardt, you and I can work on it then.
Yes.
And Representative Carlson.
I'm sure for me.
So, Mr. Chair, that is a concern, is that 15 years can come in a hurry, and then we're back, and the legislature's different. Times might be different. And, you know, certainly if it's in the general fund, you know, people can have a whack at it there, too. But, I mean, this Clean Water Fund isn't the best scenario necessarily either. Again, I don't care which one we do. I just, Mr. Chair, hope this can make it into law, because when I hear folks back in my district, that's a big concern. And they don't, you know, when I had town meetings, they didn't care where the money came from. They just wanted some compensation for this land that is going to be having to be taken out of production. So I'm hoping we can come to some peace in the valley, Mr. Chair, on this.
Thank you, Chair Mark. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Anderson, is the intent of the tax credit to compensate farmers who use the buffers and take that land out of production?
Chair Anderson,
yes.
Okay, so,
Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, if farmers are able to make hay or other crops like flowers or something on the buffer strips, are they still going to get the tax credit?
Chair Anderson,
The issue of haying, I'm a farmer, and by the way, I don't have any buffer strips, so this wouldn't affect me personally, but if you think about haying a 16-foot strip of ground, it's very difficult unless you've got self-propelled equipment, you're going to drive over crops. So to me, the haying issue doesn't make a lot of sense, because it's so difficult to hay a narrow strip. And as far as growing, you mentioned flowers or something, I suppose somebody could, but I haven't heard of that one yet, though.
Well, Chair Anderson, P. also, I think the bigger problem with haying is, who needs hay anymore? I mean, how many farmers actually have livestock?
Yeah, the piece on television about the dairy farms, is just sad to see what's happening with some of our smaller operations. Yeah.
Representative Schultz.
So they would still continue to get the tax credit even if they're able to use that land for something else, is my understanding.
Michael, that's correct, isn't it? If you can grow hay on it, you're still going to get the credit.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for the clarification. One more comment. I think that we should use the Clean Water Fund, and we should prioritize projects where we get the biggest return from that investment on cleaning our water. And going forward, I hope that committee will consider prioritizing how we use that Clean Water Fund for projects.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, is it fair to say that with the $50 an acre that the farmers probably will still lose money by taking that land out of production? Or is that a fair compensation?
Chair Anderson P.
Yeah, yes, it is. That's a good point, Representative. Usually this low land is some of the best land on a farm, and the current cash rents are anywhere from $200 to $300 an acre. So even this $50 payment I don't think would make a farmer whole in terms of what he's giving up for having a buffer on his land.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Anderson, this is a great bill, and it's a really good area to draw from the legacy money. The whole campaign when it was introduced was to clean water, so it's really a perfect fit in my opinion. Certainly this legislature has shown a history of protecting waters and using that fund to do so. So, of course, from my rural area of Wright County, there's plenty of farmers, a lot of public waterways. I certainly support it. More importantly, the farmers in my district have instructed me to support it and encouraged me to support it as well, and have reached out to the last several years of how this has really been an issue. So on behalf of the good folks of Wright County, thank you.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree with Representative Marquardt. It is a good bill, and we should get it done. But some of the questions with regard to funding, wanted to make a couple comments. Representative Anderson, as far as the bill and how it is appropriating money. This session, we've heard buzzwords a lot about guardrails and common sense, and seem to be the nomenclature of this session. And so I'm looking at something that seems to be common sense, but it may not be. I notice there's a lot of language about the commissioner establishing credits and certifying and reimbursing the counties and this cities in the school with regard to property taxes, and it would just seem to be more common sense to allow this credit to just come right off of the state tax liability on the farmer's return, and rather than messing around with having to send checks to each government unit, and I don't really care where the money comes from either, but certainly it would be, I think, more cost effective and easier for the Department of Revenue to certify how many dollars were awarded in credits and simply transfer that money from the Clean Water Fund to the general fund would be a more efficient way to just deal with this credit than sending out checks to every government unit with regard to this. I think that would reduce the fiscal cost that might have been calculated, and maybe Mr. Cummins may have some comments about that later. With regard to haying that area, I guess you could put the automated haying equipment called animals in that area, but then what goes in the front end comes out the back end, and then that doesn't make clean water if they're depositing that right there. And with regard to the statement about do buffers make clean water, I think in some circumstances they do, but I think we're ignoring the fact that most of our waterways flood. And the floodwaters exceed the boundaries of buffers and take tillable land and deposit it in the streams as well. So this is not an end-all to cure-all. And the last comment I would make with regard to owning farmland and with regard to the Conservation Reserve Program, the Clean Water Act was a federal program. And I think that with regard to future CRP contracts, the highest priority should be given to the buffer areas in terms of awarding CRP contracts. I think that's where the highest effort should be given priority. And, the CRP program is a program that is administered nationally, and there's a lot of states that aren't water-rich like Minnesota is, and so maybe the rules might be different in Minnesota versus that in Oklahoma. But nonetheless, highly erodible land, hell land, Representative Anderson, you're familiar with the farm nomenclature. That is land that is supposed to be given a priority to take it out of production so that it doesn't pollute, and these buffer strips should also rank high in that priority, in my opinion. Thank you for the bill.
Okay, I've got two more folks on here. Is there anyone else who has questions for Mr. Larson? Otherwise, we'll get to Mr. Cummins up here. Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertaus' comments on streamlining the payment process is an important one, and one that I neglected to say when I was framing out my testimony. I did hear comments from auditors that I spoke with that said the process is a little cumbersome. And so I just want to get that in before I leave. I appreciate it.
Just think how cumbersome it'll be if we don't pass the conformity bill. That'll be that'll be bad. Okay, let's bring Mr. Cummings down here. We've got two more folks, two more legislators for questions of the author, and then we'll go to the department. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. After several people said they didn't care what the funding source is, I just wanted to say I do care. I think, we're going to be talking the rest of the agenda about constitutionally dedicated funds, and this one was not one done. This was done by the people voting to increase their taxes, and I think we've made some commitments when they're making those choices, and I think that this ongoing use is perhaps does not as well fit with some of the other goals of the Clean Water Fund that have been established by hundreds of groups involved in hundreds of meetings and the plans that were put together. I was on the original legacy committee that's heard from, had hearings after hearings late into the night to hear from people about what they expected to be done with the special funds, and I'd prefer the general funds.
3 a.m, remember? 2 a.m?
Yep.
Remember
yep.
those?
We heard, and they were all very passionate no matter what time of day it was or night.
It didn't matter. And also, just so everyone knows, Greg Davids cares too. Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, it appears that the real decision on this is going to be made in another committee with your re-referral motion. But the question I have, and I don't know that there's anybody present that would be prepared to even answer it, but I suspect it'll be a discussion if your motion carries today. And the way I'll frame it is opportunities lost. If we pull out in 20 and 21 a total of roughly $27 million in legacy funds, what opportunities are lost or what would be done if this bill were to pass? And I don't know. We've got a letter here where several groups have said that they would prefer that it not be legacy dollars. But the question I have are opportunities lost, and I don't know if that's anything we can address here in the tax committee. I assume the legacy folks will have that discussion. I was told one time in committee that I'd served in every legislative committee, and that's one that I haven't, but that was an overstatement. I haven't served on them all, but I've served on a lot. But at any rate, I don't know if the department could answer that question. When I chaired Ways and Means and Finance before that, and Mr. Chairman, you were on both of those committees, the one bill that went through Ways and Means, but we really didn't have any hands-on, was the legacy. That was a totally separate line of funding and decisions made basically outside the other committees that were generally dealing it totally or in part with the general fund. So opportunities lost would be my question.
Okay. I think we'll get to that. I think by 2015, Chair Marquardt, you and I will hit a few more committees that we haven't served on yet. There aren't too many I have.
I should develop a list, Mr. Chairman.
Well, the only one is I will not serve again on HHS. That, no.
I served on that one 12 years.
Not, I was 8 on that one.
And finally gave up. At any rate, I should make a list. But keep changing the names of the committees.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
Yeah, I would say, you mentioned opportunities lost. I would say Anderson Pease bill is opportunities gained. Just think of the opportunities we have to keep water clean in outstate Minnesota. Using money where it should come from. So I say opportunities gained, not opportunities lost. But,
Mr. Chairman, my point, though, is that where those dollars would be going, if not to the tax credit, to what other initiatives may or may not be done.
Sure.
And we don't set those priorities, another committee does.
Correct. Thank you, Chair Carlson. Welcome.
Hey.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
And a very good one, I might add.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill would create a new riparian buffer credit for farmers in specified circumstances, and the amount of the credit is $50. The credit is reimbursed to counties in equal installments on October 31st and December 26th, in the year in which the taxes are payable. and the funding under the current approach comes from the Clean Water Fund. Governor Dayton thanks Representative Anderson and his colleagues for coming forward with this tax credit to help alleviate cost of compliance with riparian buffer requirements. Governor Dayton first proposed a version of this tax credit as part of his 2017 tax bill. The tax credit, as introduced, is a sensible bipartisan proposal to support Minnesota farmers who are working to protect water throughout the state. Governor Dayton strongly supported the tax credit as introduced, and he supports it being paid for from the general fund and encourages leaders to send him that bill to him as a clean bill as soon as possible. The Governor Dayton had a similar proposal last year, and so there may be some helpful updates that could be gleaned from that proposal, if that's helpful, Mr. Chair. There was some thought that was put into time frames, cost, amounts, and funding sources. As I mentioned earlier, the governor's approach from 2007 used the general fund dollars rather than the Clean Water Fund, as stated in this version of the bill. He supports appropriating general fund dollars for this bill, as the Clean Water Fund has limited specified purposes, and the Clean Water Fund does expire in 2034. The Clean Water Fund has constitutional restrictions on it that are inconsistent with this use. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to support this tax credit. We look forward to continuing the conversation with you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, other members and staff throughout session on this bill, and another important bill that's impacting many Minnesotans. And I know, Mr. Chair, there was some talk about the revenue estimate, and you know, I'm not the one who writes the revenue estimates for the Department of Revenue, so if there are people that think there could be updated assumptions, we'd be happy to work on them. I know that they've been working in the last 5 days or so in order to try and ensure that this revenue estimate is consistent with what the bill is. But if Representative Anderson or Ms. Schill have other feedback for our revenue estimators, we'd be happy to hear those.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Questions for Mr. Cummings?
Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure that this is for Mr. Cummings or who this is for, but so what happens in 2034? Does the credit go away because the revenue source it is scheduled to expire at that time? I'm just a little unclear because...
Mr. Clayman, or Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, the way the bill is drafted, it provides an appropriation to reimburse for the credit out of that fund. If the fund no longer has money in it, obviously that appropriation cannot be satisfied, and so there would be no state funding for the reimbursement of the local governments. It does not, however, stop the credit from occurring, so I'm guessing, I mean, we're talking speculation here, but I'm guessing it's probably equivalent to what has happened in the past when the legislature has cut the reimbursement for state-mandated credits, which those of you recall, the old homestead mm-hmm. credit, what mm-hmm. happened. Mm-hmm. So what would likely happen is the funding would then shift to the local jurisdictions and would somehow affect either the taxes that are paid or their local spending.
Chair Dabney.
Chances are the legislature will address this, I would guess, before it happens, but you never know.
You never know. Mr. Chair and Mr. Michael, thank you. Yeah, I guess we have to make our decisions based on current law, which is that the credit proposed is paid for out of legacy monies. Legacy goes away under current law in 2034. The credit doesn't. Current law then shifts that expense onto the other local taxpayers. So it does matter. It might just matter where it comes from.
Duly noted.
Thank you.
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I found that comment kind of interesting in light of the fact that Representative Dabney, if you're still here in 2034, I think you'll be taking the lead on renewing the legacy amendment. I fully expect that. So I find that comment rather interesting. But my question actually is for Mr. Cummings. We heard this same argument from Mr. Cummings about the governor's assertion that there's some unconstitutionality of this funding source. And I haven't seen or heard exactly what that is. Mr. Cummings, can you either tell us specifically what those constitutional concerns are, or can you get us something in writing from the governor?
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, I think, you know, you talked, Mr. Chair, about wanting to sort of make a difference with clean water, right? What is the difference that would be made? And the change in clean water practices because of this buffer credit is there's no difference, Mr. Chair. The requirements, the regulatory requirements under the law related to buffer strips are the same whether there's a tax credit or not. Now, and so the Constitution specifies that it may be spent only to protect, enhance, restore water quality in lakes, rivers, and streams, and to protect groundwater from degradation. And so if we're looking to actually try and have specified activities that do that, then, you know, it's sort of crowding out other activities. So there is an actual sort of concern that this is unconstitutional, and we would want to make sure that happens. But with that said, this is a very important initiative in order to ensure that farmers get some relief from these type of new regulations that have been put on. These regulations were bipartisan in nature when they were first put on, and we've been working to ensure that they work as well as possible. This relief is very important to the governor to make sure that that happens, and he has reached out to ensure that the tax credit, not how it's funded, but the tax credit is something that he supports. So, Chair Drazkowski and Mr. Chair, I tend to think of this as sort of a get-or-done moment, right? A moment that we can all get behind something that many people agree on to provide relief for taxpayers, and we should not use this as an opportunity to get in the way of that. And I think trying to ensure that that relief gets out to taxpayers has to be the highest priority. I think that there's a secondary concern on how to sort of raid the Clean Water Fund, and our main concern is how do we provide for relief. And so if there is some general consensus about this tax credit, let's get it done.
Well said, Mr. Cummings. Well said. Representative Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Cummings, your description of what the governor's constitutional concern here rings rather empty. You know, I think what I heard you say is that the concern is since the law is already forcing farmers to set this land aside, the Constitution doesn't want us to spend money to make that constitutional. That's what I thought I heard you say, because we have to realize that this taking is already unconstitutional. And we could end up without this program. We could end up with the Constitution being called into consideration and the courts declaring this properly as unconstitutional already. So I see it very clearly as Representative Anderson's bill's coming forward to make whole or make right or correct an unconstitutional violation of the state government. And that's what's so appealing about this to me. But the argument, at least, that you've articulated so far on behalf of the governor rings very, very empty. So, Mr. Cummings, if you have or could get for us in writing directly what the governor's constitutional concern is about the Clean Water Fund, I'd really appreciate that.
Mr. Cummings.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, I think we do disagree that there is an unconstitutionality issue related to the underlying buffer program. I think that we also may disagree that this buffer program being paid out of the Clean Water Fund would meet the constitutional requirements. But while there is disagreement in this room, I would also state that there is a high level of agreement. This tax credit will provide relief to farmers all across the state in order to ensure that they're providing relief for some of the additional items that they are responsible to do. And so, you know, if we are all saying this tax credit is something that we find value in, it's something that we want to do, We think that we should provide this relief to farmers. We should find a way to get this type of sort of state dollars out to farmers, finding a way to do that. Now, providing that relief in the general fund is something that we can do. So I'm hoping that we can get a clean bill, the bill as introduced, paid for by the general fund, and sent to the governor as soon as possible. The governor's asked for it as a clean standalone bill, and I think that would be a great victory for many of the people that we're all seeking to provide relief for. So there, while there may be some disagreement in this room, I would just try and assert that there is quite a bit of an agreement. And when there is agreement, I think that we should just sort of say, how can we get it done, Mr. Chair?
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Chair Drazkowski.
So I don't want to belabor this too much, Mr. Chair, but Mr. Cummings, you didn't answer the question. Can you get the committee the in writing what the governor's concern is constitutionally about this funding mechanism? Can you or can't you?
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, I provided that concern in testimony. I'm not sure that we would be sending over a legal brief, Mr. Chair, but I will just restate that we do have a constitutional concern here. So,
and remember, members, we cannot say in this committee if something is constitutional or not constitutional because we don't have wigs and black robes. Chair Drazkowski.
Mr. Chair, it was a yes or no question. I mean, can Mr. Cummings get us in writing what the governor's concern is about the constitutionality or unconstitutionality of the Clean Water Fund being used to fund a project for clean water?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, so I just want to be clear that I have provided a concern that I have heard about the constitutionality. I have described that concern. If you wanted to see that concern drafted out, we'd be happy to do that. If the committee wants a legal brief, I'm not sure what providing sort of a legal brief of something that could be going to litigation. I'm not sure what that would serve, but if it would be helpful for Chair Drazkowski to see a copy of my testimony, I'd be happy to provide that.
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Cummings. Look forward to that. Thanks.
Chairman Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Anderson. Mr. Cummings, if we transfer the cost of this to the general fund from the Clean Water Fund back to the general fund, wouldn't that mean there's less resources available for healthcare, education, and the environment?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, in terms of, I think around here at the legislature, Representative Garofalo, at the legislature, this is about trying to set priorities, about what sort of priorities that we can have. And, the governor really believes that Representative Anderson's bill, as introduced, paid for by the general fund, is a priority. Trying to provide relief to farmers all over the state who have taken many difficult decisions in order to ensure that they are inserting buffer strips into their land is definitely a priority. It's something that the governor wants to see. This is, as I said, Mr. Chair, this is sort of a get-or-done moment. It is something that we can do, and I think, to your point, this is a priority. So sending him that bill as a clean bill paid through by the general fund as introduced is something the governor would surely like to see, Mr. Chair.
Chair Groffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cummings, well, in the governor's state of the state, he ridiculed those of us who wanted to use the general fund to pay for things like roads and bridges. I mean, he actually mocked us for it, and there's been steady opposition from the left on that proposal. In fact, we've got I look at the list of testifiers, we have the entire education industrial complex set to testify against the constitutional dedication of the transportation bill from Representative Torkelson. So why is it that the general fund being used for roads and bridges is this assault on the education system of Minnesota, but when we transfer clean water costs, when we take it, and we suggest the same thing for clean water, that it's okay? What's the difference?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I think that we have a strong tradition and a practice of paying for transportation costs from designated accounts from the gas tax and other types of revenue sources. As it relates to prioritizing building and sustaining family farms, that's the stated intention of the legislature in statutes, Mr. Chair, to try and ensure that we have strong family farms all across the state. Frankly, that's a priority of the governor's. It's something that he wanted to see. And it has been a long priority in order to ensure that we have family farms all over. You know, this was a strong part of his budget in the past in order to ensure that we have strong family farms. It's a stated intention of the legislature. And I think, Mr. Chair, as I've stated, while there is some disagreement, there is very much agreement about having this tax credit. So the governor is hoping that we can find a way to find to come to the places that we do find agreement to have a tax credit paid for by the general fund as introduced and get him that as a clean bill, get it done, provide relief to farmers all over the state. And I think that that's something we can do.
Chairman Groffel.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe we should just cut out the middleman and compromise and use the legacy funds to pay for roads. Maybe that's the compromise position. So
I'd vote yes on that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Chair Groffel. Now, just logistically here, we have, I thought everything had been said, but not everybody said it, I guess. We got a lot of folks left to go here on this one, and then we got a ton of folks on the next one. So just looking at the clock, we're going to recess, and make sure that I say recess, at 9:45, and then we'll come back a half hour after session to this room. But of the folks on the next bill that wish to testify, has anyone driven over 50 miles from St. Paul?
No. I'll be here all day.
Oh, you're here anyways? Okay. Anybody else? We want to accommodate because we could probably get those folks on before we go to the floor. Okay. So, and for the folks on the next bunch here, we didn't have any time limits on this bill, but we're going to time it about 2 minutes. So if you have a 15-minute speech, pull out your two-minute speech, and I know you can. You're very professional, folks. You can get that done very eloquently. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of quick comments. I'll try to keep it to a minute. The legal question probably should be or could be posed to the Attorney General in terms of the legality. But something I want to point out: for a short time, I was the original author of the buffer bill. And then being in the minority, it was taken over by the majority at the time, and I became the second author. So I'm only pointing that out because I think we have a real issue before us. My earlier comments were really only the source of funding. I think we have an issue we need to resolve relative to the buffers. And my question of you, Mr. Chairman, or perhaps one of the fiscal people here, where do we stand with your tails target? We didn't talk much about that in committee because that's set informally.
Well, we don't know it. We're fine.
Well, you're fine, but did you use all of your tails target or not? That may play into this.
This doesn't involve our tails at all.
But it could.
How?
No, well, if the bill were changed, it could.
But it's not going to change.
Well, that's the decision that the majority is making, but it's still a question I'm posing.
Well, if it doesn't pass, then we'll entertain the question on tails.
Because the reason I raise that question, Mr. Chairman, I think we have a real issue that I would like to see resolved up to the benefit of the farm community. As I said earlier, you're turning this over to another committee where the real decision will be made. And it may or may not happen over there, depending on, as my earlier question was, whatever the priorities happen to be there. I'll use that rather than opportunity lost. So it may or may not happen, depending on how that committee ultimately views what they would like to accomplish with those dollars. So that's why I posed the question of where we stand with the tails. Now, the budget resolution does not include tails. Having been there, I would meet with the chairs when I chaired it, and we would set the tail target informally. And if somebody was outside the target, you'd quite frankly counsel them a bit that they had to be within that tails target. But having said that, it's not bound by the budget resolution if you were to move forward. with a slightly different approach, and I just put that out there. So I don't know if you've used your tail target or not.
Well, I've been counseled quite a bit.
So that sounds like you're at your target.
We're fine. We're fine.
Or maybe you're over your target.
No, we're not over. We're not over. But
there's no flexibility there is what you're telling me. I've gone over my minute, but I think I've made the points that I wanted to make.
And I appreciate that, Chair Carlson. And the reason I'm not too concerned about on this bill is because it doesn't affect our targets, and I don't think it will.
No, not as it's currently drafted, Mr.
Correct.
Chairman, but I was talking about the testimony we heard from the department and so on. It's an issue I'd like to see resolved.
Yeah, point well
to the
taken.
Benefit of the farm community as one of the authors of the buffer bill. But I'll stop there.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my understanding is that the whole idea behind buffers is to try to make sure we have clean water with our streams that are going through and the buffers are put in along those. And I thought it'd be helpful for our discussion to actually read what the Constitution says. 33% of the receipts shall be deposited in the Clean Water Fund and may be spent only to protect, enhance, and restore water quality in lakes, rivers, and streams, and to protect groundwater from degradation, and at least 5% of the Clean Water Fund must be spent only to protect drinking water sources. In reading the constitutional language, it seems pretty clear to me that this would be constitutional use of the money to clean the water in the buffer system. And as a member of the Legacy Committee, I look forward to hearing the bill in that committee as well.
Thank you, Representative Wills. Representative Chairman Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment. There's been comments about what happens in 2034. I guess we have to look back what happened, 10 years ago. It passed, the voters passed the legacy bill, constitutional amendment, 55.99%. I guess if it's doing its job, the people of Minnesota see that it's doing its job in terms of clean water, arts and cultural heritage, and parks and trails. If it's doing its job, if it's going to come up again on a vote, I think people will say, yeah, it's doing its job, and we'll continue with it. And maybe they'll say, maybe we don't want all three back, or four. We need to make sure that we see that. The people supported in the past, I would say they probably support it in the future. So thank you. Thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Cummins, a little bit earlier, you made a comment about the constitutionality of imposing the buffer law. And, I would like to, you seem to suggest that the governor thought that it was totally constitutional to do what he was doing. And the question really remains with regard to private property rights and ownership, something very fundamental in the founding of our nation. Although the governor's bill didn't take fee ownership of that land, it did take a stick out of that bundle of rights that property owners enjoy as being a private property owner. So the constitutionality question is whether or not just compensation has been provided. And $50 an acre, whether that's just or not, is not the question. Now we're going from uncompensation to some compensation. And I think that's a step in the right direction. But to suggest that's okay would be analogous with saying anybody who owns an apartment building or a rental property, owns commercial property, that it's okay for you to own and maintain the property and pay the taxes on the property, but you're not entitled to the rent of that apartment building or that commercial property. That's really the crux of the issue here. And the loss of income from being able to use that land, consistent with those sticks in that bundle of rights that comes with fee ownership, is central to the issue here. So I think we're moving in the right direction, but whether or not it's just compensation is still debatable.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Hertas. Representative Petersburg, and then that's the last person on my list, and I think we'll vote unless there's any questions. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Cummings. I heard earlier, I think, what the real crux is, and that is it appears that the department and the governor believes that the buffer strips were part of growth and economy in the farm community. I want to reiterate that this bill and the buffer bill is not about farm economy. It is not about farm profitability. Not one farm did they have their profit improved by the Bavarian, by the riparian buffer strips. That was a loss to every farm here. And the fact that you indicated that just as transportation has dedicated funds for the use for transportation issues and ought to be using that figure, those dollars, excuse me, makes absolutely no sense then to say that the Constitution dedicated funds for clean water ought not to be used for clean water. Now, these buffer strips are designed for developing better, clean water. Now, if you're going back and saying, well, the buffer strips don't really create that much clean water, then maybe we can revisit whether or not it's going to come out of general fund or not. But if you are insisting that buffers create clean water, then certainly the clean water fund ought to be the one that helps in the cost of a replacement and reimbursement, and at least give some of the, at least half the cost back to the farmers that taken out of production, because it is not about profitability for farmers. It is not about keeping the farm whole in what you're saying. This is actually just trying to reimbursement for what the state has taken. And so I really think you ought to rethink the idea that this bill is about keeping farmers economically sound.
Mr. Cummings?
Oh, Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg. Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, I think, first of all, I think we want to acknowledge that, you know, farmers have changed practices due to the buffer law. It's happening all over the state. It's happening in consultation with many of their local soil and water and conservation districts. And you know, the governor has heard from farmers, and that is why he so strongly supports this tax credit in order to provide some tax reductions all across the state. But, you know, this payment, whether this payment is made or not, will not change the type of change in practices that's going on now. But regardless of that, the governor still strongly believes that this payment is something that should move forward. And so that's why he thinks that we should provide this bill as introduced, paid for by the general fund, and send it to him as a clean bill as soon as possible. Now, I just did want to note, Mr. Chair, that that there was some comment made about paying for transportation funds out of the legacy amendment. And the legacy amendment was passed by the Minnesota voters. This wasn't a bill that was put forward at the legislature and then discussed between legislatures. This was something voted on by the people of Minnesota to provide for increased habitat in the Outdoor Heritage Fund, to have, you know, improve clean water practices in the Clean Water Fund, to try and improve parks and trails, and to improve the arts and cultural heritage. And so I will just tell you that efforts to raid that fund in order to pay for other activities, like transportation or something, is something that we would just, there would be opposition to. And I just want to make that very clear. But I think to go back to the general point, Mr. Chair, there are areas of disagreement. And I think that we've acknowledged that in the room, but there is so much agreement, Mr. Chair, that we can get something done here to try and find a way to...
are you talking about the conformity bill?
This bill, Mr. Chair, as introduced, paid for by the general fund, is something we can all get around. Sending this bill to the governor as a clean bill is something that the governor really would like to see.
I'm sorry, Mr.
And there's a lot of agreement, Mr. Chair, on the conformity bill, Mr. Chair.
It was 4395, Ron. I was thinking 4385. So just 10 bills off. Not bad. Representative Petersburg, I think we'll go to vote. Any follow-up?
I'll just say, this is a clean bill. It's not the direction he wants, but that doesn't make it a dirty bill. After all, this is a bumper bill, which is trying to clean things up. So this is a great clean bill. Thank you.
You'd like to wrap it up, Chair Anderson P?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of comments. I want to see this get done also, but in the fiscal year by AM 2014-15, clean water funding was $182.5 million. In the year 16-17, $228.3 million. And in 18-19, $201.4 million. So there is funding available in the clean water fund. And just a last clarification, Mr. Chair, this bill, when it came out, has always had funding on page 3, line 13, coming out of the clean water fund. I want to make that clear. That's always come from that fund. Originally, the governor said he supported the bill, and then a few days later, kind of pulled back on his support, I assume because of where the funding was going to come from, but originally did say coming out of the clean water fund. And with it, Mr. Chair, thank you for the talk this morning and the debate, and I hope this bill can move forward. Thank you.
And thank you, Chairman Anderson Peen. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Let's get this controversial bill off the deck here, and we'll get into one less controversial. So with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 4395, as amended, be referred to the Legacy Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman Anderson Peen. Now we can get through this one quickly here, this next one. House File 4437, Chair Torkelson, I see no amendments. And members, we do not have possession of the bill at this time. We will after session. So we're going to talk about it as if we had it, but we cannot say, we can't even move it right now, Representative Torkelson, because we don't have it. But we will after a bit here yet today. So with that, let's go to your bill then, just so the test drivers can get ready for their two-minute presentations. I have a Ms. Kelleher, a Mr. Amoroso, and then a Mr. Kroonquist will be the first three, and then we'll go to Nan Madden after that. And we are going to be breaking up at 9:45 to go over to floor session. And again, members and everyone in the audience will be back here at 1/2 hour after adjournment. Welcome to the committee, sir, and I will be moving your bill when we have it. Two-year bill that we don't have. Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's a pleasure to be back in the Tax Committee hearing. I haven't been here for a while, and it's also a pleasure to actually just sit and listen to a lengthy buffer conversation, which I didn't have to take part in. That was, quite enjoyable to hear everybody else talk about it, and I could just sit back and enjoy the repartee.
I noticed you're smiling back there.
I was. Well, I won't go any further with that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 4437 is a constitutional amendment to dedicate sales tax generated by auto parts and repairs to transportation and put that in the Constitution. Article 1 of the bill is the constitutional language, and it is also includes the title and question that would be on the ballot in this November. I would just point out in Article 1 in the language that goes in the Constitution, that's in Section 14, that we are recognizing that there's this cross-play between legacy and sales tax, and we want to make sure we don't violate that legacy situation because we want to make sure every dollar for buffers is available. I knew I could work it into the conversation somewhere. Article 2 of the bill is the statutory language that would have kind of the nuts and bolts of how this would work into the future. And I would just remind members that Article 1 of this bill cannot be vetoed by the governor. Article 2, however, would be subject to a veto by Governor Dayton should he so choose. I'm sure he wouldn't because it's such fine language, Mr. Chair. The Article 2 of the bill includes exactly how the funds would be distributed. The big change here from other proposals is that we are committing 4.5% of these dollars to small cities, and the other 95.5% goes to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and we are the portion of that that goes to the Trunk Highway Fund then falls into a new account called the Construction Account. That account is dedicated to construction of roads and bridges across the state of Minnesota. Then as we go through the bill towards the end, it describes just exactly the source of this revenue. Mr. Chair, we will not be counting pennies at the local Napa store. This amount of funds going into this is based on an estimation made by the department, and we're requiring them to revise that estimation every 2 years. finally, in Section 5 of the bill, we do have the phase-in. Right now, and perhaps this is a good time to turn to the spreadsheet, Mr. Chair, because I'm going to try and stick mostly to the tax issues here, and it does get a little bit complicated. If you have a copy of the spreadsheet in front of you, I'd first draw your attention to line 7 of the spreadsheet. That is the current dedication, statutory dedication of these funds to transportation. In the current biennium, we are dedicating a fairly small amount, just over $100,000. And if you drop down to line 10, you can see the percentage, where you're dedicating 12% in the current biennium, and then when we get into the tails, actually jumps to 54 and 52%, and that would carry forward in those estimations. Now, if you drop down to line 17 of the spreadsheet, you can see the percent that would be the result of this bill, should it pass and be signed into law. So we stick with the 2020 allocation of 54%, but then we step in with the increases spread out over 5 years, going from 60 to 70 to 80 to 90 and finally to 100% of this being allocated in 2025, fiscal year 2025. If you're interested in the amount of dollars available, look at line 18. That estimates the amount of money that would be dedicated by this legislation. Of course, it's based on current sales tax collections. There's also a chance that can go up or down, but with the fine economy here in the state of Minnesota, we expect it to go up over time. With that, Mr. Chair, I think I've kind of covered the I would just point out that because of that statutory language, we in my transportation bill, we have language that actually eliminates that 52% and going forward in the statutory language, so that we don't double dip for small cities. I love my small cities. I'd love to give them twice as much, but that's not the intention of this bill. If the constitutional amendment passes, then that statutory allocation to small cities actually is taken out through the language in the transportation bill. I think I've covered most of the highlights of the bill, Mr. Chair, and with that, I stand for questions. We're happy to listen to my friends that will be testifying.
Yes, and before we get any questions, I think what we'll do is, and we will have plenty of time for questions, but I'm going to remember who I said was on the list in what order. Remember that? Forget it. Because we do have some folks that do have commitments this afternoon. Don't all raise your hands. They got commitments this afternoon. We've got a little time for some folks here. Is there anyone? I have two people on the list that can't make it this afternoon that I'd like to get on the record. Is there anyone else that would be in that category? Ooh, this is going to be kind of tight here. Okay. Let's go to Mr. Houseladen first. And then up is Mr. Kevin Toma. Is he here? Oh, he's not here. Okay. Okay, so we'll go to Mr. Houseladen, 2 minutes. And then who's the person over here? Okay, and then we'll go here, and then we'll go over here.
Appreciate
it. Try and accommodate folks so they can get back with their lives. Okay, so with that being said, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is John Houseladen. I'm president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. And I am here to testify in support of the constitutional amendment to dedicate the full auto parts and repair sales to improving roads and bridges. Trucking is the lifeblood of Minnesota's economy. 78% of the state's manufactured goods travel on truck. Turkeys from Wilmer, windows from War Road, computers from Wadchester, and yes, if you got it, a truck brought it. And 68% of Minnesota communities rely exclusively on truck transportation for everything that goes in and out. No rail, no air, and no water. To keep the trucks moving and our local economies thriving, we need to maintain and grow our system of roads and bridges. We believe constitutionally dedicating the full auto parts and sales tax is critical to meeting our future needs. We urge you to vote yes for roads and support this constitutional amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Houseladen. Could you please join us and state your name and who you represent for the record, please?
Good morning, Chairman Davids and members of the committee. My name is Louise Duffy, and I live in St. Louis Park. I work at Texas Terrace Care Center in St. Louis Park and have for the past 27 years. I'm testifying on behalf of my union, SEIU Healthcare Minnesota, in opposition to this bill. SEIU represents 35,000 healthcare workers across the state in hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, and self-directed care. To begin, Minnesota should spend money on a robust highway program, but this bill does not increase the amount of money we have for roads. It just fences off money from other necessary priorities. I share the frustration of the transportation advocates. Year after year, I came here for better nursing home funding. Despite powerful bipartisan support at the end of session, we always seem to fall short. It was frustrating, but at least I knew I was heard by the people with the power to decide. I knew that if I didn't like the result, I could hold them accountable on Election Day. But when you put funding decisions into the Constitution, you take them out of our hands, the people. How do you hold current legislators accountable for something done by their predecessors? Second, I'm not an economist or a demographer, but I know the cost of long-term care will continue to increase and increase at a faster rate. Currently, my mother is being cared for in a nursing home. I am her power of attorney, and I pay those bills every month. I may need a nursing home in the future. Minnesota faces a silver tsunami of people like us and a shrinking pool of workers to provide the care. In 2015, Governor Dayton, a DFL Senate, and a Republican House passed a huge bipartisan reform of our nursing home reimbursement system. The only argument was
Thank
who deserved the most credit for passing
Thank
it. Thank you
very much. Okay, let's go to the next gentleman here. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Mark Peterson. I'm here representative of Education Minnesota Educators. I've been a firefighter. I served in the military for 14 years. I'm here in opposition to this constitutional amendment only in the fact that it diverts money specifically for specific causes. We're in a situation where education is extremely underfunded as it is. I'm coming from a school district where we have surplus funds this year, and we still had a 4.7 right sizing in my district that lost 51 jobs for educators. We are cross-subsidizing special education funds. It needs to be done, but that's a mandate coming from legislation saying, you guys have to do this, and we're not covering the rest of our kiddos. We're not covering the kids that are going above and beyond. If we take these funds out of education, I understand that no one's saying we're taking them out of education, but if we're taking funds out of the big pile and start putting it to other places, when are we going to stop doing that? We're not funding education as it is. That was something that happened at the legislative level. We've got to do this and do it right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. What school district?
St. Francis.
Oh, boy.
The Frannies, aren't you?
The Frannies?
The Frannies.
Saints.
Saints.
Saints. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It was one or the other.
Oh, I should have known that one. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Let's go then to, was there anyone else? Then let's go back to Ms. Kelleher. And thank you for your testimony, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. And you'll be hearing from my colleagues as we go forward, and we sort of build on each other. But I want to start out with Representative Torkelson has a wonderful bill, and we do believe roads and bridges need to be funded. Our concern lies that... No, I should just stop over right and get off the stand.
His bill's so good, why do you have concerns?
Well, you here in the legislature hold the permanent state checkbook. And I want to suggest to you that we can't foretell all the unfortunate incidents or unintended things that happen in the future. And if this constitutional amendment was passed, that would be money out of the state's general fund. So there would be no way to pivot with that money or fund a brand new bridge or respond to a school shooting. You as legislators can do this already. You can put this money aside this year and into the future. before you put it in a lockbox that's just left aside. So we'd like you to oppose this bill going forward.
Thank you. You got some more time because I kind of interrupted. I apologize for that.
Mr. Chairman, I think I've said it all.
Good to go? Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Kelleher. What we will do, members, now is we have the list before us, and hopefully it doesn't grow. I think everybody is on the list that wants to be on the list. And the department, of course, you're always on the list. You're always on my list. Okay. Members, you can leave stuff here. I understand this is going to be locked up. Don't leave your purses and stuff, but you just leave everything here. The pages don't have to really do anything with this. So with that, members, we are in recess until 1/2 hour after session adjourns or call of the chair. Thank you, members and testifiers. We'll reconvene the House Tax Committee, call it back to order. Representative Petersburg, if you could join us, take Chair Torkelson's place. You are Vice Chair of Transportation and second author on this bill?
That is correct.
Okay, and Chair Torkelson is in another conference committee. So what we will do is we will pick up here, and I have Gary Amoroso, Minnesota Association of School Administrators, Scott Kroonquist, Nan Madden, Bentley Graves, in that order. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Gary Amoroso. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, representing the superintendents and other district-level administrators in the state.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, sir. Want to just start off by saying we all want good roads. Our school buses go on roads. Our parents drive their kids on roads. So we want quality roads. We want safe bridges. But our main concern comes from the fact that these dollars would actually provide less available resources in the general fund moving forward. And that could have the unintended consequence of having less resources available for school districts. We have about 850,000 students, public school students in the state of Minnesota, that rely on, quite frankly, the general fund for most of the funding for their schools. The Minnesota State Constitution, Article 13, Section 1, talks about it's the state's responsibility to provide the resources through taxation or other means for our public school students. And again, while we do support the concept of quality roads and bridges, we would respectfully request that the conversation on how to address those issues, we'd look at different options other than taking funds on a permanent basis from the general fund. With that, Mr. Chair, I thank you.
Thank you, sir. Scott Kroonquist, Nan Madden, Bentley Graves, Patrick Murray. Please state your name and who represents for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for the opportunity to offer just a few brief comments. Association of Metropolitan School Districts represents 48 districts in the primarily in the Seven County metro area, although we also have Rochester and the St. Cloud School Districts in our association. And those districts enroll more than 1/2 of the state students. While we certainly appreciate the effort to address transportation funding and do not argue in any way that it's not a topic that doesn't need to be addressed, we simply do not believe the going the route of dedicating revenues that currently go into the general fund to this purpose. And we would, in fact, worry, Mr. Chairman and members, that this would really create a problem and a challenge for you to meet another constitutional obligation, and that, of course, is your obligation to provide a general and uniform system of public schools and likewise provide a sufficient funding to secure a thorough and efficient system of public schools throughout the state. Even in the best of times, and even under the current fiscal structure, that has proved to be a challenging endeavor. This next year, our school districts, the 48 districts that are part of our association, are looking at $108 million budget gap combined. We think that's largely due to the severe underfunding in the special education program. The total special education cross subsidy for next year is $679 million, and we think that removing funds that currently go into the general fund is just going to exacerbate that problem. So I will stop there, Mr. Chairman and members, but thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, sir. Nan Madden, Minnesota Budget Project, and the great Patrick Murray Russell Hess. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. Appreciate the opportunity to testify and express our strong opposition to this this legislation.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We believe that Minnesota gets the best tax and budget choices when those decisions are informed by good and current information and the public has meaningful opportunities to weigh in. Neither of those goals are met when budget choices are locked in through a constitutional amendment. Instead, in the future, when Minnesota will face different budgetary and economic circumstances, policymakers would see their hands are tied, even as Minnesota residents ask them to respond to a changed environment, whether that be a potential loss of federal funding or population growth or the needs of an aging population or other issues that may arise. In addition, making this funding choice through a constitutional amendment separates the choice to fund roads in this way from the consequences of that decision. And one consequence is that there would be fewer general fund dollars for other priorities, such as funding our schools, bringing down the cost of tuition at our state colleges and universities, or job training that develops the skilled workers that our employers need. We agree that it is important to find a way to fund the state's transportation and transit needs, but permanently shifting funding from other areas of the budget is not the right path. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Madden. Let's go to Bentley Graves, Patrick Murray, Russell Hess, Margaret Donahoe. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We at the Chamber strongly support this bill and this proposed constitutional amendment. You're
not scoring this one, are you?
It's above my pay grade, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Good answer. I'm sorry, you get extra time.
Okay, great. Employers around the state require a safe, reliable, efficient transportation system to get their employees to their door, their customers to their door, and their goods to market. This legislation will build on very important work that the legislature and the governor did last year, to bring in a piece of the sales tax on auto parts to help fund our state roads and bridges. This amendment will build on that important work by doing two things. One, it will ensure that 100% of those resources go into our transportation system. And two, it'll constitution dedicate that money so that not only will all of it go, but it will be there over the long term, and it'll help us broaden the base of financial support for our system with a funding source that's going to grow over time that will allow us to keep pace with the cost of construction over time. I know there's others that want to speak, so I'll keep that brief. But I appreciate Chair Torkelson and the Vice Chair for bringing this forward. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today and would ask your strong support.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. We'll go to Patrick Murray, Russell Hess, Margaret Donahoe, Abby Burdick. Rydick. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Patrick Murray with Cooperative Network. We're a two-state trade association of over 400 co-ops in Minnesota and Wisconsin. We appreciate Chair Torkelson as well as Vice Chair Petersburg for bringing this legislation forward. If it's advanced to voters and approved this fall, we'll infuse much-needed funding into our statewide road and bridge system. We also appreciate the legislature's efforts last year in addressing transportation funding. As several others have said, the work is not done yet. In addition to the general public, our co-op members who would benefit from passage of House File 4437 include agriculture, dairy, farm supply, and processing cooperatives throughout the state. Co-ops are integral to Minnesota's agriculture economy, as well as state's economy in general. Our co-ops deliver commodities, fuel, and inputs to our member owners throughout the state, as well as to markets throughout the country and the world. Minnesota is one of the top producing states for soybeans, corn, sugar beets, wild rice, wheat, canola, potatoes, sunflowers, as well as in the dairy and turkey production. In order to assist these farmers and co-ops who use our road and bridge system on a daily basis, our member-driven resolutions support an efficient, well-maintained transportation network of roads and bridges that are vital to the future of our state's many co-ops and their member owners. In closing, again, Cooperative Network supports House File 4437, and we appreciate your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Russell Hess, Margaret Donahoe, Abby Rydick, Jason George. And if some of the folks aren't here right now and come in later, we will accommodate them. We won't just cross you off the list. except maybe Margaret. Oh, just kidding. You didn't hear that. So Russell Hess was not here. If he comes, we will pick him up. Welcome to the committee. We're glad you're here. If you could state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. And we would like to thank Representative Torkelson for bringing House File 4437 forward this year. Dedicating the sales tax on auto repair parts to help meet important road and bridge needs is a common sense approach that ensures that those who use the roads pay for the roads. The last time that taxes were increased by the state for transportation purposes was in 2008. In the intervening decade, our organization has advocated for increases in the fuel tax in various forms, increases in the license tab fees, increases in the metro sales tax for transit, and an annual fee to help city street improvement. None of these proposals has passed. Last session, Representative Torkelson and other legislators worked to begin the process of dedicating the sales tax on auto parts to transportation. Some concerns were raised at the time that this revenue is not constitutionally dedicated, unlike the other sources that transportation usually relies on. And so in the future, it may not be there, and it may not be dependable. And we agree with that. So we are here supporting a constitutional dedication of the sales tax on auto parts so that that revenue will be there in the future for roads and bridges. This is hardly a new idea. Constitutional amendments dealing with highway funding have passed in Minnesota since the early 1900s. And we have Article 14 of the Minnesota Constitution, which is all about highway funding. Because Minnesota voters have long supported the idea of stable, dedicated funding for roads and bridges. We are asking for a very small amount of general fund money for roads and bridges, just as a very small amount of general fund money is used every year for other modes of transportation. And it is crucial for those other modes of transportation, so we think it is appropriate for general fund money to be used for transportation.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Go to Abby Breidach, Jason George, and Kathy Nathan, Max Hall, Lars Negstedt. So let's go to Abby.
That's fine.
And I'll have Chair Torkelson with us here. So please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Abby Breidach. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. Thank you for looking at this bill today.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. From the contractor's perspective, the construction industry's perspective, I think we would say that the most important thing that there is in order for us to provide the most efficient and cost-effective delivered projects is stable funding. And that is why we rely on our constitutionally dedicated funding sources to fund our system. We also try to fund the system with those who are closest to it, those who use it, by following the user fees, which is why the sales tax on auto parts fits that description. We use motor vehicle sales tax, gas taxes, and sales tax on auto parts would follow suit. If we don't continue to use these user fees, we look to other sources like local sales taxes or property taxes, which are regressive taxes and which often will fall on those who do not use the roads. We're disappointed that this conversation has been devolved into an either-or proposition. Minnesotans value their schools, health care, and their roads alike. But we have to face the reality that we haven't funded our infrastructure adequately, that we've had two gas tax increases in the last 30 years, and imagine if we had only increased our education funding twice in the last 30 years. We'd be looking for some other sources. We've got a lot of different options on the table to fund all of our state priorities, and I think that the legislature is well-equipped to be adaptable when other issues come up. I also want to mention that the gas tax equivalent of something like this would be quite insurmountable. So if this is a way that we could provide some significant resources.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
In a short amount of time.
Let's go to Mr. Russell Hess, Jason George, Kathy Nathan, Max Hall, Lars Negstedt. Russell Hess, I believe, is here now. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Russell Hess, and I represent the Laborers Union of Minnesota and North Dakota.
Welcome to the committee.
Chair Davids and members of the committee, my name is Russell Hess, and I'm the legislative director for the 12,000 men and women of the Laborers Union of Minnesota. We support House File 4437. And I'd like to start by thanking Representative Torkelson for his diligent work in bringing forward the bill that has wide support across the state. Average Minnesotans, like our members, are eager to invest and start building roads and bridges that connect our whole state. We know because we asked them. When we did, 76% of those polled said they would support this plan. Our members like the common sense nature of this bill. Using sales taxes, folks pay for auto parts to build the roads and bridges they need to get to work, get the kids to school, and take a vacation if they want, makes sense to them. In the case of our members, every dollar we spend on building infrastructure means another family with privately funded health care, another family with a privately funded retirement plan, and another family making it to the middle class. Given the chance, we believe that voters will choose to make funding roads and priorities, or roads and bridges, a priority. Please vote for HF 4437. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. We'll now go to Jason George, then Kathy Nathan, Maxwell, Lars, Nickstead, and Jessica Treat. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Jason George. I am with the Operating Engineers Local 49. We represent about 13,500 men and women that build the infrastructure for you all in the state.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, sir. Every single one of those members would benefit directly from a job if this legislation before you passes and the voters approve the amendment. So needless to say, we are in strong support. We want to thank Chairman Torkelson for bringing it forward and for his commitment and dedication to trying to find solutions to rebuild Minnesota's infrastructure. Our members and also myself are incredibly frustrated by this debate. I don't think you'll find anyone in our state that believes we're funding infrastructure adequately. Yet, we're here proposing what we think is a common sense solution, or part of a solution, an incremental solution, to let the people decide whether they want to make road construction and bridge construction a priority with less than 1% of the state's budget. When we do that, we're being told that we're being divisive or that we're somehow bankrupting the state, which does not seem reasonable to me or to anybody that I talk to at Local 49. We are used to this kind of sky is falling rhetoric, of course. Our members show up to pipeline hearings and listen to anti-pipeline extremists tell us that if we replace pipelines, we'll destroy the earth. We show up to hearings where we support mining, and we listen to them tell us if we mine copper nickel mine in northern Minnesota that the water will be destroyed and will kill the boundary waters. So unfortunately for us at our union, this kind of rhetoric is not unusual, but it doesn't mean it's not disappointing. Apparently, we've come to a point where we can't build highways, roads, and bridges in the state without this kind of talk. A couple of things I'd like to point out very quickly before you cut me off.
And I will.
I shouldn't have said that, right? I believe we've done this before. Every constitutionally dedicated source of funding for transportation, I believe at one point, was in the general fund. So this is not a new idea. A portion of the auto parts sales tax is already being dedicated to the highway fund right now as we speak. Chairman Torkelson and this body and the governor signed the bill. We did it last year.
And thank you, Mr. George,
okay,
for your comments.
Thank you, Mr.
Appreciate
Chair.
It. And the reason I stick to the 2 minutes is because there are folks out in the audience that are timing me to make sure I'm fair to everybody. So I'm fair and balanced. Well, fair. Looks like crazy here. Kathy Nathan, Max Hall, Lars Nexted, Jessica Treat, Bradley Peterson. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kathy Nathan, and I represent over 8,300 parent, teacher, and student members of the Minnesota PTA.
Welcome to the committee.
We appreciate the opportunity to testify our opposition to the constitutional amendment proposed in House File 4437. We've heard the position that this revenue is needed to give long-term stability to state transportation funding, but it's been a long time since Minnesota parents have experienced stability in state education funding. Kindergartners in 2012 entered schools who had lost almost $2,000 per student in state aid over the previous decade. Today, these students are fifth graders, and in the past 6 years, their schools have only gained back half of that state aid. Parents are skeptical that our schools will gain back the remaining $1,000 in state aid and be funded for future inflationary costs by the time these students graduate in 2027. And our skepticism increases when we hear proposals to remove revenue that supports education from the general fund with no plans to replace it. The instability in state education funding means every year is a guessing game for parents. Will effective teachers be cut from our schools? Will class sizes increase? Will there be counselors to help students with their emotional needs? Will additional resources targeted for equity and closing the achievement gaps be available? Parents are looking for legislation with a both-and approach, not an either-or. Parents want safe roads and bridges for the buses that take our children to well-funded schools that provide a well-rounded education. We ask that you look for another solution for transportation funding that does not move education funding to the back of the bus. Thanks for your consideration.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Nathan. Let's go to Max Hall, Lars Nexted, Jessica Treat, Bradley Peterson, and Carly Moline. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Max Hall, and I represent the 43,000 members of AFSCME Council 5.
Welcome, committee, sir.
Thank you. I know you don't like the term opposed, but I'm sorry to say we are strongly opposed to House File 4437.
You have concerns?
Concerns, strong very concerns. Strong concerns, Mr. Chairman. With the proposal to place a constitutional amendment question on the ballot, if this bill passes and is placed on the ballot in November, we have grave concerns that this would permanently shift money from the general fund into a separate transportation funding account. Overall, we just see this as pitting transportation projects against investments in K-12, higher education, health and human services, and other critical services that this state provides. So AFSCME Council 5 believes that raising new revenue and not shifting revenue from various funds is the responsible path to a long-term and sustainable transportation funding package. Robbing the general fund and placing such a provision into Minnesota's constitution, in our opinion, is not an equitable solution to the problem. It just fills one funding hole by creating an additional one. So we proudly represent members who are employed by the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and we have a few here in the audience. And they're primarily funded in the three areas of maintenance, inspection, and design, of which a grave concern of AFSCME Council 5 and our members is that this bill largely ignores the maintenance costs that are associated with building new roads and other forms of infrastructure. So I guess in deference to the time, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude, but we would encourage members of this committee to obviously vote in opposition to the bill. But if this bill passes and is placed on the ballot, we would encourage all Minnesotans to vote no on the amendment. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Hall, for your testimony. Let's go to Lars Nexted. Will you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lars Nexted. I represent Isaiah. We're an organization of 200 congregations, clergy, and people of faith working for racial and economic justice in Minnesota. We believe this amendment violates Minnesota values because it pits our needs against each other. Why should road funding be given this special status when we have so many serious and unmet needs for transit, schools, health care, child care, and so many other important services? We can't predict what challenges our state will face in the future, although predicting there will be challenges is a pretty safe bet. Although the popular understanding of the word prophetic is about seeing the future, a biblical prophet was not one who predicted the future. Rather, a prophet was one who read the signs of the times and warned the people about going down the wrong path. So, because we haven't heard any scripture yet today, I thought I would bring in some scripture from the prophet Amos, chapter 5. You people hate anyone who challenges injustice and speaks the whole truth in court. You have oppressed the poor and robbed them of their grain, and so you will not live in fine stone houses you build or drink wine from the beautiful vineyards you plant. I know how terrible your sins are and how many crimes you have committed. You persecute good people, take bribes, and prevent the poor from getting justice in the courts. And so keeping quiet in such evil times is the smart thing to do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Let's go to Jessica Treat, Bradley Peterson, Carla Moline, Carrie Ann Alleman. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Treat, and I'm the Executive Director of Transit for Livable Communities and St. Paul Smart Trips.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. As the largest transportation advocacy nonprofit in the state, we represent over 10,000 Minnesotans who support expanding options for transit, walking, biking, and sharing. Our organization leads Transportation Forward, a statewide coalition of over 50 partner organizations and thousands of individual supporters calling for new investments in transportation options to improve mobility, economic vitality, and quality of life in Minnesota. Today I'm also here as part of a broader coalition of organizations that oppose HF 4437. These organizations have come together to oppose the proposed constitutional amendment because instead of solving the transportation funding challenge facing our state, it shifts money from the general fund and effectively pits transportation needs against other equally vital needs such as public schools, nursing homes, services for people with disabilities, and public safety. Transportation is one of the top concerns of Minnesotans. As you are all aware, we need more funding to maintain roads and bridges across the state. At the same time, transportation is more than just roads and bridges. It includes transit, buses and trains, bicycling, walking or rolling, and sharing. We need increased new funding to invest in transportation options to keep all communities across our state moving and thriving. House File 4437 is not the solution that Minnesota needs. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We're going to go to Bradley Peterson, and I went right over one here. Gene Martinez. Is Gene here? Okay, you'll go next after Mr. Peterson. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Bradley Peterson, here today on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities.
Welcome to the committee.
And here to express my concerns in the strongest possible way. Our concerns stem from the potentially destabilizing effect.
Well, you're against it, aren't you?
What's that?
You're against it.
Mr. Chair, that's another way to put it.
Yeah, okay.
That's a more direct way to put it.
Okay.
And our concerns stem from the fact that we think this amendment could potentially have a destabilizing impact on the state's general fund and consequently the local government aid program. You know, one of the things for context that I'd like to throw out there is several testifiers have talked about how this is, you know, we're talking about less than 1% of the state's general fund. But for our members, something approaching close to $300 million a year walled off constitutionally is more than half of the local government aid program. And so small in a great context, but large in a very important context. And, Mr. Chair, city officials well remember the difficult years of the early 2000s when deficits forced numerous and significant reductions in LGA, forcing cities to cut services and increase property taxes. Because of that experience, our members are firm in their conviction that the state should do everything possible to avoid potential deficits and should not do anything to hamper the legislature's ability to deal with them. In fact, LGA has still not recovered from those cuts and remains $30.5 million below the level it was in 2002. This fact highlights the impact of deficits. They take a long time to recover from, and in the case of LGA, we have still not recovered. Constitutionally walling off up to $300 million a year will hasten the next deficit and will compound the difficulty in responding to it. And so, Mr. Chair and members, we think there are other ways to add funding to our transportation system. Amending the Constitution in this way puts many other state programs and priorities at risk unnecessarily. Please vote no.
Okay, thank you. Boy, you timed her just right. Good job. Okay, so let's go to Gene Martinez, and then next up will be Carly Moline. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you. My name is Gene Martinez. I'm with the ARC Minnesota, but I'm also testifying today on behalf of the Metropolitan Center for Independent Living, Minnesota Brain Injury Alliance, Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, and the Minnesota Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome, all organizations that promote inclusion and independence for persons with disabilities.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. We stand in opposition to House File 4437. While we understand the reasoning for dedicated funding source, we are quite concerned about the money that will be drawn from the state general fund for critical health and human services priorities. Each session, we seek to advance cost-effective legislation that will increase independence and inclusion of persons with disabilities in the community. However, any diversion of resources away from the general fund will make it all that much harder to fund those types of services, and in fact, some very hard choices about funding those services will have to be made. It also does not include any dedicated funding for transit, and persons with disabilities rely both on public transportation, like light rail and buses, but also specialized transportation, like Metro Mobility. Thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns and for your consideration of this impact that it would have on Minnesotans with disabilities. We urge you to vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Let's now go to Carly Moline, Carrie Ann, and Mr. Waffler will wrap it up. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
It's good to be here. My name is Carly Moline, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Building Trades. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon and testify in support of House File 4437 on behalf of the State Council and our 70,000 members.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Although a smaller percentage of our members work directly in the highway-heavy industry as other coalition partners such as the laborers, the 49ers, and the ironworkers, the building trades as a whole understands there's a significant benefit to the entire construction industry and working people around the state when we choose to invest in transportation projects. We understand that there are concerns about the reduction of funds from the general fund, which is why we looked at phasing the dollars out of the general fund over time, much like the motor vehicle sales tax amendment that was passed and supported by Minnesotans in 2006. Like then, we believe that the sales tax on auto parts logically should be used to fund better roads and bridges. The Minnesota State Building Trades believes we have to take the opportunity in front of us to infuse real dollars into our infrastructure that can create jobs today and build an economy for tomorrow. Today you have a chance to act, and I urge you to support House File 4437, which will put Minnesotans to work and invest in our infrastructure and economy for the future. Mr. Chair, my voice has been cutting in and out all day, so I'd be happy to take any questions. If they're difficult questions, I might lose my voice, but other than that, I will be happy to answer questions.
Well, what do you think about the estate tax?
Did Mr. Rubis ask you to ask that?
Just kidding. Okay, thank you. We'll go now to Carrie Ann. Help me out with that last name.
Alleman, you said it right.
Oh, I did? Oh, cool. Alleman, then Mr. Waffler. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Carrie Ann Alleman. I actually represent the Harris Township from Itasca County, the Minnesota Association of Townships.
Welcome.
Thank you. Here in support today for House Bill 4437, as townships have to maintain 56,000 miles of road. If you guys can just bear with me for just 1 second, the last time I actually testified on this bill, the first one was 32 seconds long, the second one was 45. I have just one quick thing I wanted to tell you a story here of what I had with my kids. My most important job that I have is being a mother. So I have three children. They're 18, 16, and 14. And my 14-year-old had a project due for school of what do your parents do for a living? So sarcasm runs really, really strong in my family. My kids all have my sarcastic bone. So it was a very interesting conversation trying to explain to my kids what I do down here. So I did explain that I get to come and have the opportunity to speak to committees like yours. When I explained to them that the last bill that I actually testified on was this one in the Transportation House bill, they asked me what it was. I actually had my 18-year-old read it. He graduates from college tomorrow. In high school on June 1st, so he has a little bit of knowledge of basic knowledge of government working. So he actually read it.
He graduated from college and high school?
Yep. My oldest two are actually in the post-secondary education opportunity.
What are they going to do next?
My son is going to trade school actually this fall, and he's going to be an electrician. He'll have his AA degree, and he'll be an electrician this fall, or go to school for that this fall. And my daughter, who is 16, will graduate next year at 17, and she's actually going to go to school to be a marine biologist.
Wow.
So my two kids got, and my third is going there also. Just to finish this up, my 14-year-old actually reminded me when she was 12 and she was in sixth grade, she was riding the bus to school, and they went over particularly rough part of the road, and she got a huge lump on the side of her head. Getting to school, she actually had to go to the nurse's office. The nurse called me and says, you need to take her in. Nothing major was wrong, no concussions or anything like that, but she did stay home from school that day, and that was the last time my children did ride the bus to school, because that was the second time one of my kids had been hurt on the road on the way to school. Having talked to my children about this particular bill, schools do deserve more funding. Absolutely, they are underfunded. But getting our kids to school safely should be one of the most
important things. We're past the time, but what do your kids say about the bill?
They want to support this bill.
Okay,
if my kids actually didn't have finals, they were actually going to be here today to testify.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chair, did each of the kids get 2 minutes as well?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Mr. Woffler.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. Where do you go to school to be a marine biologist these days?
Hawaii.
Hawaii or the Big Island or where?
BYU, Hawaii. It's in it's up on Big Island.
The Big Island? Yep. They have volcanoes. I hope I didn't get hit with that.
campus so far is fine. It's on the other side, so it's about 40 miles away from where the eruption is. But hopefully she actually changes her mind and goes to Florida instead.
I was in Hawaii in February, and we went on the tour, and we went up to look down the volcano, and I thought, this probably isn't the smartest thing in the world. You know, I'm just saying, but it was kind of foggy, so you couldn't really see it that well. Let's wrap it up, sir.
Okay.
It's all yours.
Okay. I get extra minutes because I'm the last guy.
No.
Okay. I'm Jim Woffler.
A minute and a half.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jim Woffler, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association. We urge you to support enactment of this constitutional amendment proposal, House File 4437. As you may know, over 80% of all Minnesota roads are asphalt pavements, and so we are acutely aware that there is a huge unmet need on our state's highway systems and bridges as well, and that we must do something now. We also realize that given today's political climate, this is probably the only viable way to get significant new permanent funding for the state's roads and bridges. This method of funding our transportation systems, dedication via constitutional prescription, has been the primary way we have always funded highways and bridges in Minnesota, because legislators in the past recognized the critical importance of these transportation systems to Minnesota's economy and culture. I want to stress that this amendment, which would generate about $300 million a year, represents less than one-half of 1% of the entire state budget. We believe Minnesota voters will be supportive of this proposal this fall, and we will do everything we can to ensure its success on the ballot. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Woffler. We'll now go to the department, then we'll go to member questions. So we're very fortunate this evening, or the late afternoon, to have Mr. Cummings with us. If you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee.
I was able to email Representative Torkelson last night, so he knows that.
How many pages?
I'll be here as a resource.
Oh, okay, that's great.
More than half of Minnesota's roads are more than 50 years old, and 40% of the state bridges are more than 40 years old. In the next 3 years, one in five Minnesota roads will pass their useful life, making it increasingly difficult for Minnesota businesses to move their goods to market and for Minnesotans to commute. Governor Dayton believes that we need to invest in Minnesota's infrastructure, roads and bridges, and transit from new funding sources. However, shifting general fund is robbing the state's investment in elderly care, E-12 education, higher education, health care, public safety, and environmental protection. The funding needs for our state roads and bridges are above $15 billion over the next 20 years and $600 million per year. The constitutional amendment proposals barely meets the state's needs for roads and bridges. The constitutional amendment significantly underfunds the need for transportation funding as compared to the governor's transportation proposal. The governor's proposal would have generated $670 million in fiscal year 21 for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, as compared to the constitutional amendment that would generate $248 million or $220 million in that year from the House and Senate, respectively. Permanently dedicating revenue from the sales tax on auto part ties the hands of future legislatures when Minnesota is hit with another recession. The constitutional amendments make $0 in investments into Metro and Greater Minnesota Transit, whereas the governor has over the last few years proposed a regional sales tax to build a competitive regional transit to support economic growth. The governor's proposal would have raised $3 billion over the next 10 years. Since 2013, the governor has proposed a regional sales tax that would have built 20 transit ways and expanded our public bus system. This investment would have created better accessibility to jobs, provide mobility options, reduce the growth of congestion, and made the use of our current roadways more efficient. Instead of these investments, metro area transit has received mostly preservation and maintenance funds. By singling out a new constitutional investment for roads and bridges, it only ignores another integral piece of our transportation puzzle. Metro Transit already facing a funding cliff in fiscal year 20 and 21 and will need additional resources to maintain and preserve current bus transit services. Budgeting through constitutional amendment is a poor way of managing the state's budget. Creating a sustainable framework for funding Minnesota's roads, bridges, and transit ways is within reach, Mr. Chair, and does not need a constitutional amendment. We thank you for the opportunity to testify today on this bill, Mr. Chair, and we look forward to continuing the conversation with you and Chair Torkelson and other members and staff this session on this bill and another important bill that is moving its way through the legislature. Well, two, Mr. Chair, one of which is the buffer bill, the buffer bill that we talked about this morning.
And you could talk to some Torkelson about that. He's kind of feeling left out about now.
Mr. Chair, you know, we've worked with him in the past on previous proposals for the riparian buffer tax credits. So.
Well, thank you for your testimony. I was just thinking as you were testifying, the governor really doesn't have a lot to say about this, does he?
Mr. Chair, there are significant concerns with this approach from the administration, and we want to ensure that that is known on the record. We believe that there are other options to do the same, what is trying to be accomplished through this, without sort of reprioritizing other investments that could be made in E-12, higher education, healthcare, public safety.
And I thank you for that, and we do want to hear what the governor has to say because the tax committee cares. Okay. Questions for members? If you just want to maybe stick there first, or I don't know, I suppose we can call folks up that have already testified if members have questions. I'll talk to them later. So these questions will go to the department and to the chair, the chief author of the bill, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Torkelson, for bringing this bill forward. I'm a strong supporter of it. I just want to, you know, make a statement. You know, there's going to be plenty of money for the state if we would grow our gross domestic product at a 3, 4, or even 4.5% rate per year. In 2016, the Minnesota GDP grew at 1.5%. It's projected to grow under 3% in the next few years and then decline even further. We're overtaxing and overregulating our state. I really appreciated the testimony of the individual who talked about the pipelines and the mining and the extremist agenda that is being promoted through our regulations and taxes that are preventing us to access in an environmentally friendly way the resources that we need to do to grow our GDP at 3 to 4% per year. That will generate billions of dollars and take care of our needs in education, healthcare, and even in the wastewater area. So rather than saying we have to raise taxes, let's reform our system of taxes and regulations and grow this economy. We have the resources, the individuals, and the businesses to do it if we don't strangle them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any testimony to the bill before us? Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Cummins, I think I heard you say that this doesn't provide money for investments in transit in rural Minnesota. And I think that rural Minnesota transit relies mostly on roads and bridges. I don't know of, or nor am I aware of, rail projects that are being proposed in greater Minnesota or rural Minnesota. Secondly, with regard to the transit component, it's my understanding that about 5% of all ridership is transit. And of that 5%, only about 1.5% is rail. So given the $6 billion that we maybe need over the next 10 years, maybe you could explain to me why the governor's position in supporting rail projects at a cost of $2 billion over the next 10 years is justifiable for 1.5% of ridership. You know, that's basically a third of all of the investments proposed to get all of our roads and bridges back in shape over the next 10 years is suggesting that the priority is over 1.5% of ridership over 97.5% of people who ride roads and bridges to work and to school and in any other way that they carry on their course of daily business. So I'm confused by that.
Just to correct the record, there are outstate rail projects being proposed, but I think Draskowski and I have taken care of that. Mr. Cummings.
Well, Mr. Chair, I certainly appreciate the comments as it relates to transit. Transit allows people to get from, commute to work, or allows them to get to the place that they need to get in more of a concentrated fashion. And as, you know, some of the metro area gets to be more dense, people are going to rely more upon these types of systems to get where they need to go. But I think what ultimately we're trying to say here is this a conversation about rail? Well, it's obviously not, because $0 is being spent here in order to ensure that our bus or other types of transit are being funded. And what this is actually doing, it is taking away hundreds of millions of dollars into the future and permanently reprioritizing those dollars to be spent not on care for elderly, not to be provided for E-12 education, not to be provided on higher education, not to be provided on health care, and not to be provided on public safety and other critical needs. So this is a permanent reprioritization of dollars instead of funding new dollars in a balanced way that can look out at a long-term future for our transportation system. So while I think that there may be an effort to try and say, you know, let's talk about rail or let's talk about other things, what this is doing is a permanent reprioritization of dollars rather than having a long-term discussion about how to fund the transportation system in Minnesota. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to just thank, first of all, Chair Torkelson for carrying this bill and bringing this forward. I think this is probably the next step in our ability to grow our funding for roads and bridges. I would like to kind of reiterate a lot of the discussion that I've heard so far today and kind of give my 2 cents worth into what it all means. We've heard an awful lot about how constitutionally dedicating funds ties the hands of future legislatures. And, you know, I believe that every time constitutionally dedicated amendments came forth in the past in regards to gasoline tax and sales tax and all the other things, I'm guessing the same issues came up and the same discussions were about how it was going to be horrendous. We've heard the department say, oh, constitutionally dedicating funds is a poor way of addressing new funding for roads and bridges. Yet, on the other side, oh, but what we want to fund it with is constitutionally dedicated funding. And that seems kind of arbitrary to me and certainly contradictory in really what they're saying. The reality is here in Minnesota, we tax everything. We tax sometimes things two or three times. And it seems to me that we all understand that cars and trucks and buses wear out the roads. That's probably one of the reasons why most people think that the sales tax on vehicles and sales tax on leases and registration fees ought to go into roads and bridges because the cars are what is being funded. It makes, to me, perfect sense that the same parts and the same tires and other things that are used to keep cars and buses and stuff on the road ought to be the same. It ought to go to fund the roads and bridges that it is tearing up and wearing out. So to me, it's just logical for that. On top of it, when we add it to parts, that at least has some ability to grow with the inflated costs and growing costs of the parts and supplies to handle it. So it actually grows, whereas the gas tax stays flat. Now, we've also heard that this new growth is less or just a little over 0.5% of Minnesota budget. In reality, I would bet that our margin of error for the budget forecast is probably greater than that. So let us keep in context exactly what we're talking about here. We're talking about having an issue in which we're asking the public, the people who will vote on this, whether or not they think it's appropriate for us to take on the sales tax for parts and other things that we're already collecting for a situation in which they are actually part of the problem of wearing down our roads and bridges, if that ought to be indeed part of the funding source for our roads and bridges. It seems to make perfect sense to me, and I would certainly request everybody vote aye on this particular bill. Thank you, Chair Torkelson.
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg, I guess I hear you in terms of the gas tax, and that is something that is dedicated under the Constitution, so I certainly understand that. But I also, wanted to make the point that sometimes our economy and also sort of the public expenditures made here down at the Capitol are not necessarily congruent. They're not necessarily the same base. For example, Mr. Chair, I used to have a Fitbit, right? One of those bands, you know. But then I realized that you can't go swimming with the Fitbit, and I like to go swimming. So I got a new Apple Watch. And on the Apple Watch, it's great because you can program these exercises in there, and it shows how much, you know, it's like a pedometer. It says how much you've been walking.
I wouldn't really be interested in that.
How much water that you've drank. But, Mr. Chair, at some point we could say that Fitbits, or maybe these fitness trackers, maybe the dedicated revenue from those fitness trackers should be spent on healthcare expenditures, right?
That's an idea.
But to say that somehow our broad-based sales tax is going to match the needs within how we spend publicly expenditure dollars, publicly spent dollars, you know, we have different sort of needs that the state legislature wants to spend on than every sort of expenditure that happens within the economy, and that's probably needed. You know, government obviously spends differently than a normal in terms of what is actually needed within the economy. I mean, if there was need for homelessness prevention, is there something that could be taxed within the economy that we could dedicate? Sometimes there aren't natural things that can be done and in the same amount. So this would be a first of its kind within the sales tax in terms of siphoning off a certain part of the sales tax economy. But I certainly understand what you're talking about with dedication of revenue.
Thank you. And point well taken. Representative Petersburg.
Well, I'm confused because I thought we were siphoning off the sales tax on auto purchases, which originally was part of the sales tax bill. And so are we not doing that anymore? Because I'm confused then, because I thought that was part of one of our main pieces of funding is sales tax on vehicles. So we do have that option of siphoning off sales tax from the general fund going to roads and bridges. So I don't understand the difference here when we're talking about basically the same thing. If these used parts had come on a new vehicle, we'd say, okay, that's okay. But because they're used parts or they're brand new parts for a used vehicle, then it's not. I mean, I do think that this makes perfect sense.
Mr. Cummings?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess that there is the sales tax. That sales tax, I think, is generated under a different statute than the general sales tax. I mean, I think we're talking about 297A versus 297B. But, again, I know that we're talking about sort of constitutional dedication and what that means and what parts of the general sales tax should be siphoned off for certain reasons, and I think that's what we're trying to have a discussion here about, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Okay. Mr. Cummings, on the buffer bill this morning, we set it up, I think, brilliantly to take out a legacy fund where it should be from because it's about clean water. But you testified that the governor wanted to take it from the general fund, which would take money from schools and health care and my tax reciprocity, things like that. And now we're kind of just saying the opposite. Could you help me out here?
Well, Mr. Chair, there are various items that come up within the needs of the state. So what we're seeing right now is we're seeing some newer regulations that are put on, and farmers are trying to find a way in which to comply to those regulations. So that is a proposal and, frankly, a priority to ensure how can we provide resources back to farmers in order to provide some relief to farmers. And in every time, in every sort of legislature, in every year, legislators come together and set priorities with the funds that they have in order to do that. And what I tried to say this morning, excuse me, is a priority should be to provide that relief to farmers in a bill as introduced from the general fund right away, clean bill. But other future legislatures in the future could say that there's an increased need to provide relief to certain types of farmers or increased need for other types of things. But what this bill before us does is ties the hand of future legislatures in order to set priorities on what is the most important priority that the state could be funding at this time. And so I do think that it's different. Now, right now, today, the governor thinks that providing relief to farmers is a priority, and he hopes that a bill can be sent from the general fund. But it's also not tying the hands of future legislatures in order to spend that revenue.
Chairman Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, I'm very much in favor of this bill because I think it gives the people of Minnesota that decision that Mr. Cummings was talking about. And I think if the people of Minnesota want to tie the hands of future legislatures, that's their job, and that's their prerogative. And I hope they make that decision, and we give them the opportunity to, yay or nay, make that decision. But, Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do, I missed the earlier part of the hearing, and I don't know if Mr. Lee could walk through the numbers on the spreadsheet again. My question is, as I look at these, the amount above the base, and then there's a breakout down here between the small cities amount and the highway user tax distribution fund. I assume those numbers, Mr. Lee, will go up if you consider the amount of the base plus the amount above the base. Am I making any sense to you or not?
Please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. Representative Drazkowski, yeah, if you look on the spreadsheet on line 16 in the bold highlighted letters numbers are the amount that were the constitutional amendment to be passed and all the statutory language session law language that goes with it to be enacted. That's the additional cost of the general fund. And then on lines 20 and 21 is the split out of just that additional piece to the HUTD into small cities. So the lines 20 and 21 doesn't include the other sales taxes that were dedicated mostly to the highway user tax distribution fund that are on lines 3, 4, and part of 5.
So Mr. Chair and
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. So that same breakout that we see on lines 20 and 21, Mr. Lee, with this bill, will that apply to the $458 million that's in the current base?
Mr. Lee.
That same breakout.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, no. The bill before you would only apply to the auto parts portion of those various pieces of the tax. So it would only apply to the total auto parts on line 9 once it's fully phased in. That's what the in 2021 at $279 million. And right now, because forecast windows only go out 4 years, I only have that static number going into the future. So we can see on line 16 or 15 that shows the total dedication in 2025. So above current law base on line 16, that's $133.356 million that's going to HUTD and small cities. But the constitutional amendment wouldn't change the distribution within the existing statutorily dedicated sales tax, so the rental tax or the motor vehicle lease sales tax, if that answers your question.
Chair Drazkowski.
It kind of does. I'll maybe talk to you offline about it, but I'd like to understand it better. But thank you.
Thank you, Chair Drazkowski. Mr. Cummings didn't leave us, did he? Okay, because there's one more question. Is it for him? Oh.
No, well, if he wants to comment, sure.
Okay. Yeah, we'll let the department up there. Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Kosnick, then I have Dabney and Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, serving on the Transportation Committee for the last 3 years, you know, we do have and recognize a certain amount of dedicated funds currently. And so when we go to our budgeting year, we're always fighting for additional funds like other committees. But because we have the dedicated funds currently, we don't always are never as fully funded as the need is. And so I think this bill recognizes that a little bit. And because in historical perspective, the legislature hasn't kept up with the need that we've all agreed on through a couple different studies in the transportation department or committee. So fighting for funds every year just doesn't seem to get the job done. And so thank you, Chair Torkelson, for recognizing that and bringing this bill forward. You know, basically we're leaving it to the voters, which I think is probably the next appropriate step, to use barely a half a percent of the sales tax, or excuse me, half a percent of the general funds to provide a service that I think they expect, decent roads and bridges, and they expect that to be a priority. Some of the conversation has talked about transit and that this bill doesn't necessarily flow into metro transit and those funds, but we have to remember and keep in mind that in 2006, the amendment was offered to use the MVES, the sales tax, and up to 40% of that has been used for that, those purposes. So we're kind of second in line on our roads and bridges, and transit has already been prioritized first. And then thirdly, Mr. Cummings sort of referenced it, but Representative Vice Chair Petersburg had talked about the gas tax and additional revenue. Just simply does not have the support in the legislatures in the time that I've been here. I think Representative Petersburg offered an amendment last year about increasing the gas tax, and if I remember, there was no support or maybe very little. I don't even know if there was one vote in favor of that. And so absent any support in the legislature, that leads us to leaving it to the voters, and I think we all recognize the need, and so again, I'm in support of this bill for that purpose. And then finally, Mr. Chair, I have introduced a bill that's sitting, hasn't yet to be heard, but it's valid for this conversation, in addition to the conversation we had earlier today with the legacy funds, that it's House File 1862 that would generate about another $100 million for our roads and bridges out of the legacy fund to help preserve our legacy road system, and we can go into that a little bit more at a different time, but just recognizing that there is a need that we've identified bipartisanly for more road and bridge funding, and I think this is the next adequate and appropriate step to take, and the voters in my district expect the government to provide roads and bridges to do their business and to do their travel, and so I'm supporting of this, and so are the people of Lakeville.
Thank you, Mr. Kosnick. Chairman Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe someday we'll talk about properly funding our legacy public school system. Mr. Cummins, I heard some of your concerns, and I share some. I've concerned that this isn't a balanced approach, that it's not a transportation approach, it's a road and bridges only approach. We often talk around here about how much we like the bus system until it
comes time to put money into the bus system, and then that fandom disappears. But I'm particularly sure your concerns about this dedication crowding out other priorities in the future. That, you know, we may be okay right now, and maybe, you know, taking $600 million out of the general fund to put into roads and bridges might be the right thing. I'd have to, you know, look at the details, but maybe that would be the right thing. But I also see that the economy is softening. I look in the last year or so, and the GDP, nationally the GDP growth rate is down. GDP in the first quarter of this year is down. The annual growth rate in GDP is down. GDP per capita is down. So I get concerned, lacking a crystal ball, but I get concerned that, you know, while business just got a 40% tax cut, instead of putting it into, say, equipment purchases, which is down, they're putting it mostly into stock buybacks, which doesn't grow the economy. And an economy that isn't growing isn't going to provide us any additional revenues. And so I get particularly concerned that a decreasing pie of state revenues because of a decreasing economy that we're starting to see currently means even less available for elder care, public schools, environmental concerns, and other priorities. From the Department of Revenue's perspective, are there concerns about the direction of the economy broadly, or is that more of an MMB sort of question? I don't want you to get out of your lane, as it were, no pun intended.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, you know, in terms of trying to anticipate sort of future economic conditions or future forecasts, that is certainly something that MMB would be more suited to talk about. I will say that when we're looking at some of the budget bills that have been passing this session, whether it's this, which would dedicate hundreds of millions of dollars for transportation, the supplemental budget bill, the tax bill that has tails that greatly exceed what is in the first biennium, you know, we're beginning to see an approach in which whether it is increases in tax reductions or increases in spending, there is sort of the appetite in order to do that, but not the willingness to try and pay for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to try and find a way. I think that, you know, one of the things, again, like this morning, we actually agree upon the need, right? We see that there's a need out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we're just asking respectfully is, can we find a way to pay for it that doesn't crowd out other sort of priorities? As we know that the economy will change. We know it will change, so that as it changes, that we're not crowding out certain priorities, especially when we have $1 billion of obligations that we're sort of committing to with, you know, even under current forecasts, without that billions of dollars available.
Thank you, Mr. Cummins. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, this bill does and is intended to, I think, tie the hands of future legislators. But there was a provision in the bill and implementing it that I hadn't seen, I don't think, in other constitutional amendments. And I thought I should highlight that. And that's on line 1.16, which is no change in the apportionment of the revenue may be made within 6 years of the last previous change. And so that ties the legislature even more, even in implementing the transportation things. And I think that a lot of the people who we heard testify in support of this probably got their hopes up when our current president started talking about a $1 trillion investment in public infrastructure statewide, and we thought the money was going to rain down from Washington, D.C. to help us deal with public infrastructure issues. And then, you know, it took a long time coming, and then it was like, oh, you got to have a 30% match, and I don't think it's got any traction right now from what I heard, but people in the room probably know much more than I do. But if we get a president who actually wants to rein $1 trillion for public infrastructure, because there's someone who really feels like bridges are a priority, let's say, and we get a lot of new money for bridges, we're going to be locked in not only by the dedication of this in the Constitution, but we can't change course. And so even if we've allocated a certain amount for a certain use, we can't change course the way this is implemented, except every 6 years. So even within the transportation area, we're tying our hands, I think, much too tightly. And Washington has become even more unpredictable than ever, and maybe this is going to be a trend. And so I think that as we look ahead to how do we prepare and anticipate the needs of our budget going forward, I think this is really tying our hands even more. And I'm really disappointed to see that even in the implementation after the dedication, there's no flexibility. And I'm wondering if this – I've never seen this before in a constitutional amendment. I wonder if our staff knows. Is this kind of unique?
Mr. Michael, is this unique?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, no, that exact language appears in the Constitution that is in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And I think the sense behind it was to create some predictability so that the legislature every other year or so cannot change how that money is distributed among the various uses to provide some predictability for longer-term investment in highways. So.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I mean, I can recognize where people like predictability. Unfortunately, no other committee in this body has that same level of predictability. Everybody would love dedicated funding source and have, you know, the dedication to their cause there. But the other thing I worry about is the public's increasingly becoming cynical, and I think this over promises a solution that isn't going to step up to what we need. And if you look at the chart that Representative Drazkowski, you know, called our attention to, in the year 2021, so 3 years after the voters, if they've approved this, have approved it, the only new money is $22 million. And $22 million for roads and bridges doesn't go very far. So they're going to think, yay, you know, all my potholes are going to be fixed. My curbs, my city council members and county commissioners are going to stop complaining. My commute's going to be shorter. And, you know, I think they're going to be really disappointed to see that there's only $22 million. I think everyone who testified in this room is going to be pretty disappointed because I think their members and their workers are going to be thinking, we're in the good times when we if it passes. And the good times are going to be pretty small. And so I think we need to think about that, too, as we move forward. And, you know, one of the members here talked about how, you know, in transportation, you know, it's like every year there's a fight for funds every year. Well, you know what? That's true in every single committee. And I'm not sure that this one is any different than any other. And if you read the Star Tribune on Sunday, you read about people in their 20s, bright young people, who want to be teachers, people who want to go to school to achieve their dreams like every other young person. And because they can't find a personal care attendant, because the wages that we set in law by our rates are so low that not only are they not going to college just because they happen to be trapped in a body that nature won't let them control, but they are being pushed into nursing homes, and one of them talked about how dismal it is to be 25 years old and live in a building filled with seniors and have had already 20 people that she's been part of a community with pass away. And what kind of an atmosphere is for that for anyone? And I suspect, you know, in education you hear those same stories about the large class sizes and the unmet needs, and higher education we hear about the kids going into debt and not pursuing majors that we need in our state's economy because it's the student loans are too high. And I just think putting this one topic area ahead of everyone else is tough, but if we're going to do it, the kind of money here isn't gonna meet the need. So at this point, I don't think I can support this, and I appreciate you having a hearing on it.
Mr. Cummings?
No, not at this time.
Okay.
I've got just one thing I want to say before the end. But.
You'll certainly have that opportunity. Chairman Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just before I
make some comments. I'd like some clarification. I've heard some members say that this is one half of 1% of the budget, and I have a different number. So, I mean, the number I get is about 500 fully phased in at $279 million a year. And according to this chart, that'd be $550 million for the 2021 budget, and the 2018 forecast on the 2021 budget, it'd be about 1.15%. So I agree, granted, that's, but, so I don't know for sure what, are we talking about the first year of the phase-in or what? But I think the realistic number would be fully phased in, this consciously dedicated amount would be a little over 1%. So I just, am I, maybe, I'd like a little care, I don't know what number's being used, for example, when the half percent. I'm kind of a numbers guy, so either I'm getting something wrong or they're. And I know, I think Representative Petersburg mentioned something about that. So. Okay, there we go.
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the question becomes, you know, what are we talking about? Well,
right.
The current law that's in place right now, $245 million a year is going into from the sales tax into this. So the constitutional amendment will only add the additional amount from on top of that. So that's where it comes to that 6% or 0.6%, actually, I think is about what it is, because that's the new money that this constitutional amendment would dedicate beyond what is already current in statute of the constitutionally dedicated funds. If we were to eliminate it altogether, then there would actually be a reduction in funding. So hopefully that's black clarified.
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Petersburg, but the total amount that will be constitutionally dedicated now, which means separated in a constitutional dedication, will be when it fully phases in to a $279 million a year from the auto parts. Is that part correct?
Mr. Petersburg?
That is correct.
Okay.
If you want to use the total amount that's already in law versus what it will be dedicated, then you're correct.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there is a big difference between having it statutorily set aside versus constitutionally. I mean, that's a huge difference. And so, you know, and we've had people kind of, I think, minimize the amount that this $279 million of separated money that the legislature no longer basically has control over, or $558 million over a biennium. Just to put that in perspective, you know how much we debate when we try to raise education, like 2% a year, last time around, 2%, 2%. That's $400 million. And if you go 3 and 3, that's $600 million. And this is 558. So it's very, you know, how much we struggle to increase that. And, you know, you get this pie, and while we're increasing money to transportation, the pie isn't getting any bigger. And, you know, you look at 2021 spending for Agriculture Department and Jobs, Economic Development, Housing and Commerce, those two main areas, the total we spend on that in a biennium is $525 million. This is $558. That's going to be separated out of this budget now. Two huge areas. County program aid is about, what, $230, $240 million a year. This is $279 million a year. So the numbers are significant, especially when you're looking at new dollars to potentially deal with. And, you know, the concern is that we are singling out a certain part of our budget. And we're saying that basically this is going to be assured and the other areas are not. And so while we're singling out transportation, there is no constitutional dedicated funding for students or constitutionally dedicated funding for senior citizens in nursing home or people with disabilities. And while I think transportation is very important, I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't think it's more important than students or our seniors in our nursing homes or our people with disabilities. And I think we're singling out a part of the budget that now is going to get that funding, while these other ones are going to have to struggle, especially, you know, everyone knows that we're in, I think, the longest post-recession growth period since the Great Depression. So we're not always going to have good times. And when we start getting into a recession is when you're going to really see this. And you're going to have students and seniors in nursing homes and people with disabilities fighting for dollars. And transportation is going to be sitting over here, tootling down the road just fine. And that's what worries me about this. We need the funding for transportation. I don't think this is the way, and I don't think it solves the $600 million a year that we need for transportation, just roads and bridges. This gets us part way, but I don't know what the plan is to do it the rest of the way. But I'm just thinking what we're doing is not trying to face the tough decisions. Actually, as a legislature, what people elected us to do is come down here, make the tough decisions that aren't easy. But if we're going to say we're going to just take everything to a constitutional amendment that is difficult, then why do we have people elect us? This advocate our authority. But I'm here, down here, to make the tough decisions, whether or not it's transportation or whatever it is. And I think we need to do that on here. And so I can't support this approach as much as I would like to increase the funding for transportation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, by the way, I had a discussion with the chair on the House floor, and I offered to trade ties with him, but he declined. My tie says oofta, and that's kind of where we're at today. But he declined. But where I was headed, you know, there are different ways you can use percentages. And having been involved on several biennium with helping put the budget together, we could talk percentage of our economic growth that would be being set aside. That's a totally different percentage and one that's an unknown factor as we begin to move into the future. But the dollars that are available to meet the inflationary costs of the various accounts that we have, or other new initiatives that may come forward that are based on need in a variety of places in the budget. A few years ago, the fastest growing part of our budget was corrections, interesting enough, when you start talking about percentages and the number of beds that were needed and so on. So my concern is that it reduces our flexibility, but I wanted to pick up on what Representative Marquardt was saying and what Representative Dabney said earlier. Two of us on this committee, due to our role on Ways and Means, sitting on the Council of Economic Advisors. And some good testimony that would have been good for this committee, as I'm thinking about it, would have been to hear from Dr. Koulikangas, the state economist, and just a quick review of the February forecast, because they're dealing with predictions forecasting into the future. And what Representative Dabney was saying is absolutely correct. The economic growth is projected to get slower and slower. But the other thing is, and I'm picking up on what Representative Marquardt, you used the term recession at one point in your comments, and the risk factor in the last forecast, any of you can look at the report, the risk factor of a recession has increased. I'm not saying that it's imminent or that it's around the corner, but the risk factor of a recession has increased. It was, and I'm just kind of picking a number from memory because it was back in January, February when we were talking about this, but let's say it was roughly a risk factor of 25% from the November forecast, and it increased to like 30% with the February forecast. So the point is that the risk factor increased. So I think those are some of the things that we have to consider, because we are, with this constitutional amendment, going to tie down a lot of our economic growth into the future and reduce the flexibility of dealing with the budget. And I think those of us on Ways and Means and those of us here on taxes have to be cognizant of that and what it means for our future decision-making, because we won't have the flexibility that we have here today. And each time we pass a constitutional amendment, slicing off a piece of the pie, that reduces our flexibility. And I have to admit, I've sometimes supported some of those constitutional amendments. Other times I've tried to argue for caution And I think that's where I am today. I'm going to argue for caution because I think that Representative Dabney was hitting it right on the head in terms of at least the decline. Mm-hmm. And then I'm adding to his comments the risk of a recession having increased. So I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, unless you want to trade ties.
That is a nice tie.
Well, it's kind of a little bright, but it does say UFTA. And
that's why I had a
refresh. Now we got the bonding bill up tomorrow, and I thought maybe I should have wore it tomorrow. But
you wear it tomorrow.
Pardon?
You wear it 2 days.
Well, I suppose I could 2 days in a row.
I don't, yeah. But
I try not to as well, Mr. Chairman. But I think we're digressing.
Just a bit.
Yeah, just a bit.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. For St. Petersburg, then it will be my intention to go to the department, to the author, unless other members have questions. Representative Schultz. Okay, we're St. Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will just close my comments out this way. You know, we heard earlier about how everybody would love to have the predictability and a constitutional amendment to deal with. Please be careful about what you wish for, because with that constitutionality and that dependability also limits your top. It doesn't give you any time to grow, because everybody says it's constitutionally dedicated and you should deal with that. But one of the reasons for the need for higher predictability in the transportation department, and we've heard this over and over again from the department, is how long it takes projects to get done. You can't put a project out there and get it started, which is going to take 2 to 3 years, and then have the funding pulled out because of recession. So there is a need for predictability, which is, I think, different than a lot of other areas of state governance that requires us to have some dependability going forward into what the funding is there. Even the contractors say, if we don't think the money is coming, we do jobs outside of state, or they have to downsize or whatever. They really do depend upon that predictability and the dependability of those funds. And that's one of the challenges we have in the transportation field is doing that. And so I'm saying anything that we can do to actually minimize the ups and downs and valleys of normal economic growth in regards to the construction field, and that, which is primarily what Department of Transportation is a benefit to the state and a benefit to us as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm really sympathetic to labor as a union member. I understand the need for dedicated funding for transportation and for the jobs for those unions. But as a legislator, I'm responsible for making decisions for the entire state, the entire population. And I have a problem with moving money to transportation that will fund other things that the state needs, like education and health care and human services. I think the question that should be on the ballot is whether Minnesotans want dedicated new sources of revenue. And I don't think the Republicans in this session have the courage to put that on the ballot or to offer up bills where we're having new sources of revenue for transportation. And so I cannot support this bill, because I don't believe we should just shift money from needed services to transportation. We should be coming up with new dedicated revenue.
Well, first of all, I would say the Republicans have a great deal of courage, and so do my friends on the DFL side. Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick question. It goes back to some language in the constitutional amendment provision on 1.17 that Representative Loeffler brought up, and I just wanted to be clear on what it meant. It says, may be made within 6 years of the last previous change. And so, Mr. Michael, does that mean that the legislature can only make that decision 6 years out, or that it has to be effective 6 years out? So, in other words, could a legislature in year three put into law for year six under this language?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's although the plain language of it could be read that it's a constraint on when you decide, I think it's when it's effective, because the practicality, I think the court would read it in a way to say that what we're trying to effectuate is this goal of stability, predictability of funding, and so effectively the legislature in 2021 could say, I mean, I assume that once this, if this bill were to be enacted and signed into the law by the governor, the Article 2 of it, that would be, that would start the six-year clock running. And the 2021 or 2022 legislature could, as you suggested, say, when that six-year clock is up, we intend to change how this money is used so that, you know, the cities get more or the trunk highway fund gets less or something like that. So I think it, I think it's most reasonably read as a six-year funding window, not a limit on when the legislature can enact that.
Okay. Chair Drazkowski. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions for members before we go to the department? I don't want to cut off any members here. Mr. Cummings, and then we'll have the author of the bill wrap it up, and then I will move it.
Mr. Chair, I guess just in closing, and I'll be very brief, that I think that there is general agreement that we need to have a comprehensive strategy to ensure that we have an approach that funds roads and bridges and transit ways all across the state. And so there is broad agreement. There is a week and a half, 2 weeks left, and I think that we can get to a place in which we can provide that comprehensive agreement. I know that today we're talking about different approaches to trying to meet that same goal, and there is some disagreement, but we do share the same goal. Mr. Chair, we are in the eighth year of an economic expansion in this country, and we have a budget that is enacted for a two-year period, and so as I took my economics courses, you know, people make rational decisions, you know, holding all other things constant. You know, how do people make decisions? And that's sort of how that's done. And so if, as people sort of make that, and if there's some, a constitutional dedication, that the, all other things that would be constant are going to change. But they're not going to be able to make that decision. So while this fall, where there is an enacted budget and an economic expansion, this may seem like a decision that is worthy to be done. But in the future, if the decision is between funding roads and bridges or taking away a person's health insurance or cutting their local school or cutting cops from the streets, people may make other sort of rational decisions. And this limits that ability to do that. So, again, we agree that there needs to be a long-term funding approach to do that. I believe that we can work together to do that. We do have some time in order to get that done this year. Before I end, though, I did want to thank Representative Torkelson. Representative Torkelson has worked with the department very quite a bit on approaches that deal with transportation or the environment. He's carried department bills in the past. He's always treated us very fairly. I know that we have a disagreement today, but I did want to thank him for all the work. He's a person that we want to continue to work with, and he's been fair. Like I said, we haven't always agreed on everything, but we do appreciate the relationship we have with Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. I would just make one comment on your testimony. But if they change, then they're not constant.
Mr. Chair, what I was trying to describe is the economy changes. There are various things, pressures within the economy that will change, that will put various budget pressures on. And while the legislature can go and say, well, we're going to decide to be nimble, to change things, a person isn't going to be able to say in the future, well, the economy has changed, and there's a constitutional amendment. Should we appropriate these dollars to save people's health care, or should we continue the appropriation to, you know, to roads and bridges? That's not going to happen, right? It's not going to be on the constitutional amendment. You can do that at the legislature. You can make those decisions, you know, whether you should appropriate that or not. But really putting it on the ballot, well, it might be a decision that people might say, if holding all other things constant this year, that may make sense. In future years, in deficits, people may think that may not make sense. And so, and I think that people will be able to tell their legislators that, you know, what is the right mix of goods and services that they would like the government in order to be able to provide to their residents. And so I think that was the basis of the comments, Mr. Chair. But again, we have there is a lot of agreement on the need, and we do think that there's a time throughout the rest of the session to get this done, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. To wrap it up, Chairman Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for hearing the bill. Thanks to the members and their brisk discussion of the bill. Thanks to the testifiers that brought their concerns forward and their support forward. You know, Mr. Chair, I mentioned when I first got here that I was happy to be back in the Tax Committee because I did serve in the Tax Committee at one time. But, you know, after being chastised by an Old Testament prophet and accused of lacking courage, I'm not so sure.
Mr. Torkelson, if you want to ride with the big boys, you better saddle up.
I'm buckled in now, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I can take it. Mr. Chair, on a more serious note, you know, as I've gone through this process. gone through this process and thought about, you know, all his testimony and all these perspectives, I've asked myself, why do we have all this dedicated revenue already in the Constitution? Why did the people that served before us decide decades ago that dedicating revenue to transportation was so important? And I think that I haven't studied it. Maybe there's some writing on it, but I think it's a couple of reasons. One, transportation is so important to all of us that no part of our economy can function without a well-maintained and well-built transportation system. Even the transit system can't function without good roads and bridges. It's critical. And second, I believe that there must have been some times in our history, legislative history, where the transportation funding was either cut or threatened because of other needs, and transportation ended up on the short end and we were unable to do the work we need to do. We fall behind. And we've experienced that ourselves in recent history where raising more revenue for transportation has been extremely difficult because the dedicated revenue pile is sitting there, and many people look at that and think, well, you've got enough. You've got dedicated funding. You don't need any more. We were able to overcome that slightly last year. This constitutional amendment is another step in the direction of adding to that pile of dedicated revenue. We have broad agreement that we are underfunding transportation today. I'm not characterizing this as being the be-all, end-all for transportation funding. It's just another step in the right direction, and I thank you again, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill, and I ask for your support.
And thank you, Chairman Torkelson. And last week, I think, was our last meeting for the session, and so today is the second last. So I don't know if we meet again or not, but be looking for Dr. Rubis's emails. So that, again, members, thank you so much for your work. Mr. Cummings in the department, Commissioner Bowerly, please give her my best. You are just the very best to work with, and I sincerely appreciate it. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 4437 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion prevails. You're on your way, Chair Torkelson. And with that, an announcement, very important announcement, John Wick 3 will be released May 17th, 2019 in a theater near you. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.